That's the danger of Facebook, is you can just casually acknowledge someone's existence by clicking the button that says like.
I kind of do that on Twitter sometimes too. I'll just like, you know, favorite a tweet or something, and
yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's like the equivalent of just like, yeah, I'm reading. I don't have anything to say. But then...
yeah. Sweet, bro. Thumbs up.
Yeah, I see more and more people using favorite as a like button.
Yeah, because I've had tweets get favorited where I'd sit there going, like, I wonder why they wanted to keep a record of that tweet. It's like a tweet where I'm just like, I really hate popcorn or something. And like, favorited, yeah, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I used to use it as a way of like, oh, this person linked to an article or a video that I don't have time to watch, but I'm interested, so this will make it easier to find.
That's and what I use it for.
Then I end up never, like, going back and finding it. And then next thing I know, like, things like, you have, like, 7,000 favorites. I'm like,
Yeah, I never thought to do it as, like, a, you know, oh, I want to look at this later kind of thing. That's actually probably a more sound idea than, hey, I like that, buddy.
Well, back in the day, favoriting wasn't, like, favoriting and retweeting wasn't shared with the user who got favorited or retweeted.
Yeah.
So back in the day, I was like, yeah, favoriting must just be so I can bookmark tweets. And then now you do it, and sometimes people are like, thanks for the fave. And I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Didn't know you were going to... No, like, I remember when they changed that, I actually got really wigged out, because I was like, well, now I want to favorite tweets less, because I don't like the idea of someone seeing that I favorited their tweet, because they're going to start trying to figure out why. Social media. We opened up this evening looking at GIFs of wrestlers, but now we're going to talk about Transformers. My name is Vangelis, welcome to WTF at TFW. My GIF source to my left is Seth Buzzard.
Hey, I believe in Andy and Mikey.
Me too. Especially that Andy.
What do you got against? What do you have against Mikey? Is it because he's Irish? Or yeah, you racist?
You actually cut me off when I was about to say, because he's Irish, and you said, is it because he's Irish? And I was like, well, now if I say it, then I'm just parroting what you said, so it's because he's a paleontologist.
That's, well, if you have a problem with him being Irish, then you 75% have a problem with me.
Uh-oh. Are you a paleontologist as well?
2% paleontologist.
All right, well, no offense,
75% Irish.
But what, I mean, what is even a paleontologist?
It's someone that perpetrates the lie that the Earth is older than 7,000 years by claiming that there's these fake bones that are older than that.
Yeah, thanks for being a liar, Mikey.
Yeah.
You liar. Also joining us today, live from C2E2, is Mr. Dan Defoz!
That kind of feels like a wrestler intro. Like, I need some theme song music now. I can be coming out. There'll be pyrotechnics blowing up, and I'll be like, yo, what's up? You guys love me. Or if I'm a heel, I'll be like, you guys hate me. Screw you.
He's got to play the air guitar like Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Well, then Vangelis should revamp the intro to include hailing from parts unknown, because all the best wrestlers come from parts unknown.
But I know where Dan's from. I'd be a liar like Mikey.
But you don't you don't know what street. So that part's unknown.
Hailing from streets unknown.
Streets unknown. And I am from the streets, by the way, kids. But yeah, I'm up here in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, staying at my in-laws, and just got done with day one of C2E2.
I thought it was
Comic and Entertainment Expo.
I always wonder what that meant. Okay. Yes.
They have their own beer.
I thought it was Illinois.
No. What? Don't say that.
Illinois.
Let's just move on.
Illinois. On the streets, don't they call it Illinois on the streets? Because it's Illin with the noise.
Keep all that Illinois down, yo.
I like to visit Illinois when I visit America.
I like that better. I like that better.
Illinois.
Illinois.
We are here today, ladies and gentlemen, to talk to you about Transformers. And we're going to start off by talking about something really tragic that we just found out about this week. This is like kind of rocked the Transformers world. And it's made me have to give Transformers, the fourth installment of the film franchise, a really hard second look. Apparently, now we know Mark Wahlberg is in Transformers, but apparently he wasn't the first pick. Apparently someone who literally could have had the role if they wanted it was Dwayne the Goddamn Rock Johnson, who was in the G.I. Joe movie that just came out as Roadblock. He was also in Transformers Prime's first episode as Cliffjumper. And apparently he was going to have a lead role, the one filled by Mark Wahlberg, in Transformers 4, but he had to turn it down due to working on Hercules. This is what led to Mark Wahlberg taking the role. Now, apparently Mark Wahlberg and The Rock have become somewhat buddies while they were working on Michael Bay's film Pain and Gain, and have been casually chatting about how they should meet up in a film to cross over G.I. Joe and Transformers. And that's all well and cool, whatever, I hope that happens. But Transformers could have been perfect. And now it will never be as perfect as it could have been. And this is worse than the Jason Statham rumor, because this could have actually happened. So I am honestly rocked to the core. I don't know how, if I can now really, 100% support the quality of this fine film. Seth Buzzard, what about you? Can
riveting.
Can you go to the theater in good conscience now?
Well, no, because I haven't really been into any of the Transformer movies yet, so I will go out of obligation, but, those two guys are so different. Like, it's going to be hard to imagine that it even would have been the same character. Like, you'd almost think they would have to rewrite the whole movie based on which one of those two guys it is. Because I can't imagine either one of them doing what the other would do in any way.
My hope is that Mark Wahlberg's performance in Transformers 4 will be him doing a somewhat comical Dwayne Johnson impersonation.
A lot of cocked up eyebrows and everything like that. That'd be great.
The movie Transformers have movable eyebrows. There could have been a moment.
Oh, man.
There could have been a moment. One of them tearing off the outer casing of his elbow and throwing it aside.
Yes! Oh my god, now I'm disappointed.
If they had reunited the Nation of Domination for Transformers 4, then it would have been all into it.
Maybe they're the villains. Like the Transformers.
The Rock was part of the Nation.
I know,
but yeah, but it can be when he makes his face turn and he turns on the Nation.
Oh. Yeah, he like debuts the eyebrow, the Decepticons all pile on him, and they're like, he should be dead. And it turns out he's Circuit Breaker. Because they repair him, because all the Decepticons piled on him. Man, we could have seen The Rock running around with huge CG robots. Like, that would have just made my decade right there.
And huge CG eyebrows.
Yeah.
And apparently a metal bikini if he was Circuit Breaker.
Well, wrestlers wear, they wear trunks and stuff. Just dress him up like The Rock, the wrestler, and put, circuit panels all over him. You know, like in that Star Trek Voyager episode where he had the eyebrow stuff. The Tsunkatse episode or whatever. Hey, Dan, how are you feeling about Transformers with the knowledge that it could have been Transformers starring The Rock?
Well, somebody who went to see G.I. Joe Retaliation with a very open mind, The Rock was great in it, but it did not make the movie. Honestly, The Rock was probably, and I hope there's limited amount of hate mail on this, The Rock was probably one of the few redeemable things of G.I. Joe Retaliation. I know some people went to the theater and said they had some fun, and that's great. I don't mean to take away from the fun anybody had, but I think it's just a case of like, The Rock being in the movie won't necessarily make the movie better. The Rock will do a good job because that's what The Rock does. It probably wouldn't help Transformers 4 or, had The Rock not done a good job, which would be odd, but I don't think that would make the movie any worse. I think Transformers 4 is still going to be good based on its story. Maybe robot design. I don't know. It's a real mixed bag when it comes to fans of the movie and detractors of the movie. So
Do we know anything about the story? Where do you base it?
There's like a one sentence plot summary that got let out a couple weeks ago, which is that this is 5 years later, and that's actually, I think, the only plot that was revealed.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, Transformers 4, I don't think is going to be any better or worse whether The Rock is in it or not. It's all going to be based on the story.
I don't know, but, man.
Well, I think it could have been more fun with The Rock, because I don't think of Wahlberg as, like, a fun time guy. Like, he usually plays kind of, I don't know how to describe it, kind of almost melancholy characters most of the time.
I can definitely see where you're going with, can definitely see where you're coming from on that one.
Like, I love Three Kings. I thought that movie was great. But he's the most bland of the characters.
True.
I do want to have a quick two-part response to Dan, your comments. Number one, if you didn't enjoy G.I. Joe Retaliation, but you're saying The Rock was still good, that makes me really excited to still catch that movie sometime. Because I would love to like a protagonist in a G.I. Joe movie. That's already good to hear. Number two, you said The Rock a whole bunch when you were sharing your opinions, and I could not help but imagine you were actually speaking as though The Rock was speaking in character, because he uses his name in third person a lot.
I kind of channeled The Rock there a little bit with a little less energy and talent. I think that sidebar about G.I. Joe Retaliation, and that's all I'll do about it.
And note, I haven't seen it, so I'm not speaking from any manager. Either.
And I'm trying not to reveal any kind of spoiler or whatever. Like, I almost want to say that I enjoyed Rise of Cobra as a whole more than I did Retaliation. And sadly enough, and this is going to sound like I'm totally trolling everybody and making it up, but I think Retaliation might have been a little better if they did indeed add a little more Channing Tatum. I don't know why. I don't know why I say that, but just like the little bit that they added at the beginning of the movie between The Rock and Channing Tatum, I was like, you know, I kind of dig this relationship. And, you know, then Channing is not in it for the entire movie. And that's a well-known thing. So,
wasn't part of the whole reason that movie was delayed was because they were shooting more Channing Tatum?
Yeah, well, that was one rumor. The other thing was they're actually going and doing 3D. There's a few scenes that you can tell was picked up way later. They were just kind of like shoehorned. Hey, let's throw this scene in here. But like, Bruce Willis, which was supposed to be a really big selling point in this movie, I felt everything Bruce Willis was in was really just forced and shoehorned in. It didn't really work for me at all. Cobra Commander was kind of this, they kind of made him look like he was supposed to be kind of a badass, and yet they still gave him some of like the hokey corniness from the cartoon in some of his like dialogue choices. So the whole movie just kind of felt like a mess, but The Rock was The Rock. He was the solid part of the movie, in my opinion.
The Rock is what everyone wants Bruce Willis to be, because unfortunately, there's a car alarm going off outside my window, but ignoring
how
that...
convenient.
Everyone wants Bruce Willis to make a movie. Yeah, I know. You like Bruce Willis. Well, up yours, buddy.
And, no, that's Kevin Smith out there. He hates Bruce Willis.
That's where I'm going. Is I think the Kevin Smith movie with Bruce Willis and the experiences related in there, those kind of illustrate that if Bruce Willis wants to phone it in, he'll phone it in, and he'll take the paycheck, and he's not going to be the draw. Seriously. Anyway.
Well, on
thank you.
I mean, just continuing to tangent all over the place. Kevin Smith did a podcast with the writer-director of Looper,
mm-hmm.
and they were comparing Bruce Willis notes. And Smith has a theory that if you're a writer-director, then you have that experience with Bruce Willis that you want to have, where he's there to act and he's there to be part of things. And if you're just the director, as Smith was for Cop Out, he didn't write that movie. Willis doesn't want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
You don't really have input because you didn't write the thing.
And I don't think writer-director would be the setup that Retaliation would have had.
No. Well, like, with the first Joe movie, I went in there expecting absolutely to hate it. And ended up enjoying it more. I still don't think it's a good movie, but I ended up liking it more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, me too. I always tell people that movie, I'm not going to defend most of the performances. I will simply stand by Gordon-Levitt, and I will stand by Eccleston, because those two guys made the movie for me.
Yeah, but it just, it felt so much to me like a movie from the 90s, like they were doing all those. Yeah, like, it felt like it was written by people who didn't really know the material.
Yeah.
Or they only knew, like, the most basic surface element, and then they made up all this other junk. It just felt old and uninformed. After getting all these nerd culture movies recently that are brilliant, like the Nolan Batmans and all the Marvel movies, you come to expect, and I think the Transformer movies suffer from this a lot, to bring it back around on topic. They're not really being written by people who know the material, and they're not being directed by people that know the material. So they're sort of making up their own thing that just happens to share names and basic ideas with what we know. And I feel that way about the X-Men movies too. Like, those drive me nuts.
Well, the whole thing of all the toy movies still doing it is something I said back in, I think, 08 or 07, which is, like, toy movies, even now, still, like, toy property movies are more or less where comic book movies were in the darkest days of comic book movies. Because I think toy movies are still kind of a newer thing right now. There wasn't one for a very long time, and then they started to come up again, and I think they're still in that kind of dark place where it's like the people who love this material are not the ones who are in charge of this material. They're maybe like the artist, or they are the one of the crew members. And so there's like there are places for hints to come in, but the people in charge are calling the shots. Like, you know, the almost Hellboy movie where Hellboy would have turned green and only turned into Hellboy when he got mad. Like that kind of thing.
You mean the Hulk?
Oh, Guillermo del Toro has a story where that's what an executive wanted the Hellboy movie to be.
What?
When it's being written. Yeah, Guillermo del Toro goes into an office to discuss Hellboy, and the man in the suit in the office says, "Now, this seems a cool idea, but I was wondering, you know, just to make it a better thing, maybe he only turns into Hellboy when he's angry. And otherwise, he's this attractive-looking guy. And also, instead of being red, why doesn't he turn green? Green is a better color. Red just doesn't look very good."
They're like, somebody already does that. We should probably do something else.
Or the worst of the Fantastic Four movies, like that kind of place.
I've never seen a Fantastic Four movie.
The first one has two really good actors in it who are playing two really good members of the Fantastic Four, so it's a very good Fantastic Two movie.
Now, are you talking about the Michael Chiklis ones, or the one that never came out?
The Chiklis ones. The one that never came out is beautiful for its own reasons, and none of them were intentional. That's what's the term for that? Ashcan copy. Like, it was made to be trashed to hold on to rights, and in that context, there's some kind of wonderful little things in there.
Oh, but Stan Lee hates that.
I know.
I've heard him talk about it. Like, he finds the whole thing offensive. Like, those people didn't know that they were making a piece of crap that was never going to be shown, just so they could hold on to the rights. They thought that they were doing the best job they could.
And that's what
Stan's like, this is messed up. These people tried, and they were being used, and I don't approve.
That's the small beauty in the movie, is that all the actors and all the SFX people are all giving 100%. Like, the guy playing Mr. Fantastic is awful, but you can tell that he thinks he is playing the role of a lifetime. And there's something kind of beautiful about that. It's like the motivations behind the performances in Lost Skeleton of Cadavra, only the actors aren't in on the joke.
Well, Kevin Smith has talked about, like, with his experience writing the Nicolas Cage Superman movie that was never going to be. When they first started talking to him about writing that script, and this is what I think is going on with toy movies, is when they first started talking to him about doing the Superman film, he's like, why don't you go to DC and get one of these guys that have been writing Superman comics for decades? Like, they know more about the character than I'll, or they've forgotten more about the character than I'll ever know. And they're, and like the movie people would be like, those are comic book people, Kevin. You're a movie person. Like, we want a movie person. And he's like, I made Clerks. That was barely a movie.
Yeah.
But it's like, that seems to be where it is for Transformers and G.I. Joe and all this Battleship. It's it's just get one of those like script by committees where you have like there's been scripts like this recently.
Yeah,
I think the at least the first X-Men, if not the first two X-Men, were written that way. Like, you would have 3 to 5 writers. They would all write a separate script, and then the studio would take all the pieces that they liked.
Yeah, and that's pretty much exactly what I mean, is the state that comic book movies were in, that maybe they are still in here and there, but that they're getting out of and growing from, is where toy movies are now. And I say that with the follow-up of, I think toy movies could go to where comic book movies have gone. There will, of course, always be missteps. I mean, and I didn't hate the movie as much as everyone else did, except for Jared. But Green Lantern movie, perfect example of a modern misstep. That's still going to happen. But, you know, we're in a period that we're watching other parts of pop culture grow out of, but toy movies are growing into.
Yeah, and as long as the Transformer movies are busting the million or the billion dollar mark, there's not going to be a lot of motivation to change.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the weird thing with G.I. Joe is that, like, although Rise of Cobra felt like it didn't have the same knowledge of G.I. Joe, I felt it captured more of the fun and just totally out there bizarro-ness of an old G.I. Joe episode. It felt like an episode of G.I. Joe. It was super fantastical. It was just out there and over the top. Yeah, they might not have gotten all of, like, you know, the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Yeah.
But it captured the spirit of G.I. Joe. Whereas Retaliation, it felt like they were trying to do something a little more gritty, a little more adult, a little more, yeah, this is hardcore. And I just feel like they missed the mark. And like Transformers is so weird because it kind of like, it just, like if you look from movie 1 to 3, it's just all over the place with that. Like
it's hopping over the barrier back and forth within the same movie constantly.
Yeah, like I think the first movie did it best, and everything that came after it was just like a weird roller coaster ride. And so I have no idea what to expect for 4. And honestly, like thinking back to where we originally started in this conversation, I'm kind of going to take some stuff back and say, you know, I would rather have The Rock in this movie than Marky Mark, because I'm thinking of a Marky Mark movie and it's usually not a movie I enjoy. No offense to Marky Mark. He's a fine actor for what he does.
He
but
tries
it's just,
really
no
hard.
No offense to Marky Mark, but I'm going to keep calling him Marky Mark.
Sorry. Mark Wahlberg.
Dude spent so much. He was in the limelight with that name for so long. No matter how he tries to live it down, he should be able to take it on the chin when people say Marky Mark.
I apologize, Mark Wahlberg. It's just every time I
apologize
think that,
to the Funky
like,
Bunch,
Marky Mark comes out. Yeah, what about the Funky Bunch? The poor Funky Bunch.
I was trying I didn't know how to describe Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch because someone asked me just today if that was a boy band. And I was like, well, not really.
It was like a B-boy band. What?
Yeah.
Because it's not like it was Mark Wahlberg and 4 other dudes who all got equal billing, because it was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
So, yeah, they were just like, you know, relegated to one group naming.
Yeah. Anyway, long story short, I wish The Rock was in Transformers 4.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I wish he was in there too.
And yeah, The Rock's just, he's more fun.
Yeah, he's inherently fun.
I mean, I'd even rather have Vin Diesel than Mark Wahlberg.
Me too!
Because even though he's all monotone and gravelly, it's, you could tell, like, I thought Chronicles of Riddick is an awful movie.
I'm going to fight you.
But you could tell Vin Diesel's having loads of fun doing it.
Vin Diesel is, I think, in most films I've seen him in, and in just the way he talks, much like The Rock, they both very genuinely are having a good time with what they're doing, which is a quality I like in Tyrese Gibson. And the thing that they have over Tyrese Gibson is I think they also have a wider range of delivery than Tyrese Gibson. Vin Diesel, maybe questionably so. I'm mostly referencing the Riddick movies there. But Mark Wahlberg, in what I've seen him in, my one problem with him is he always looks like he still wants you to take him really seriously.
That's a really good way to put it.
I never get that fun feeling from Mark Wahlberg. Even in movies that are fun, like The Three Kings, he's the most not fun part of that movie.
And yet, in Max Payne, he's unable to properly play a character made for a movie, well, a moody guy, but that was also, I think, the fault of the director, because Mark Wahlberg became Max Payne every now and then for a couple of words, and then would just kind of, like, turn back into Mark Wahlberg. And I blame the director entirely for that, for not properly handling that guy.
Oh, who's, what's that guy's name? Irish guy. He was on Phone Booth.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell would be good.
Yeah.
I would like Colin Farrell in that part over Mark Wahlberg. Have you seen Seven Psychopaths?
I haven't.
Oh, so great. Colin Farrell is awesome in that movie.
I'll just close off this tangent by saying I also finally saw Django Unchained last night, and I liked most of it more than I thought I would, but I'm still very annoyed with Tarantino for a certain thing, which I blew up on Twitter about last night.
Let's get Jamie Foxx in there. He would be better than Mark Wahlberg.
You know, I would love to see
Jamie Foxx as Ray Charles in Transformers 4.
Who is the guy from Michael Jai White? That's another guy that needs to be in a Transformers movie.
Who's he?
Michael Jai White. He
I know that's the name, Spawn, but... man. It's Spawn.
He was the live action Spawn. He's also been in a number of very low budget, just like fight dudes movies.
I know the name. He was in The Dark Knight. Is he the guy that was Urkel?
No.
No. That's Jaleel White.
If Urkel became Michael Jai White, then I don't know how the human body works anymore.
That's like a Pokemon evolution right there.
That's like Pikachu becoming Mewtwo. I just dropped all my Pokemon knowledge right there.
Remember the Old Spice commercials from a couple years ago?
Yeah.
With the guy on the horse? Get that guy over Mark Wahlberg.
Well, that guy would be able to improv and roll. That would be a good time.
And I feel like I have to reiterate that I'm not trashing Mark Wahlberg. I think he is good in the right kinds of movies. I just don't imagine that this is that kind of movie.
And I want him to break out, and I want him to become another, like, Vin Diesel or The Rock, or, you know, that tier. Just become that tier where I get excited to hear your name in a movie. That would be great for Mark Wahlberg, I think.
Let's get Donnie Wahlberg instead of Mark Wahlberg. How about
that? Why don't we get both of them as Mega and Giga, and then they're the bad guys, and they combine with Overlord, movie Overlord.
Oh, God. Turning into a really weird fanfiction.
We're
right
doing
now.
That thing we did back in 08 when we were making Revenge of the Fallen awesome.
When we were making it fun.
Yeah. We should move on from here. It's been half an hour, nearly. Let's do some new picture
picks.
Who would
have thought that topic would have lasted?
Yeah, what the hell? Okay, new picture picks. Seth, you kick it off.
Hey. Hero Toys, spelled H-E-E-R-O.
Classic name.
They are making a world's smallest laser Optimus Prime. Now, are these the same guys that did the little Dinobots and Shockwave?
No, that's Just Toys.
Okay,
Hero,
that's
is
what I thought.
He's the guy who does all the G1 Optimuses and Seekers in world's smallest scale.
Okay.
He also used to be the big source for stolen Chinese animated toys back in the day.
Ah. Well, he's doing Laser Optimus Prime. These pictures are only showing the vehicle mode.
Yeah.
But you could see in the trailer, like those two round bits on the top, one of them was a disc launcher in the original toy. It kind of looks like it might launch discs. Because, yeah. I mean, those tops are different. And that would be awesome. Like, if they kept that gimmick in, that would be amazing.
I've been told by people who have bought things from Hero that over the last couple of years, his quality of production has very quietly gotten better and better. So there's people really jazzed about this.
Yeah, and the Laser Prime mold is an older figure, but I think it still holds up. It had a lot of really good engineering and articulation. And so yeah, like if he keeps it all there, this could be a cool little set.
And I saw this news item right as I was messing with my world's smallest six shot, and I was thinking the exact same thing. Like even if he just clones the engineering, that could be a really badass little toy.
Well, I think that's kind of the point with these world smallest is to make them as accurate to the originals as possible at the much, much smaller size.
Yep. And I want to say you can, like on the hips, like the exposed hips in the truck mode, you can see the slot cut for a ball joint. So I suspect there are at least ball jointed hips, if not the full engineering crushed down in there. I am super jazzed about this. I want to say he did an Ultra Magnus trailer for the G1 World Smallest Prime. That people really liked, because I know GM Fan has talked about getting some kind of world's smallest Magnus trailer, and I think it was from Heroes. And yeah, I'm into this. And Heroes is, I used to buy loose animated toys from him all the time, way back in the day. He's the guy who sold the 99-cent bulkheads. So I'm excited to have a reason to buy something from him again.
And I think this could work out pretty cool.
Yeah. Dan, how do you feel about like the continuation of this world's smallest thing with these unofficial third-party guys covering it?
I think it's pretty cool. I don't have a lot of world's smallest, but I remember back in our earlier BotCon days, we would pick these guys up at a convention and marvel at it's like the exact same transformation. And remember Soundwave had little tapes that was just ridiculous. So to see somebody, continue this on, I think is totally awesome. And my only thing is I would love to see this as R.I.D. Scourge.
Given the way Hero has gotten the money's worth out of his molds, I'd say that's pretty much a given.
Oh, and now I'm seeing through the thread a lot of people are also asking the same thing. I want Scourge. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's done the Seekers and World's Smallest Prime. So World's Smallest Prime and World's Smallest Seekers, he has done in like every imaginable plastic polymer you can think of. So
yeah, well, there you go.
I will be gobsmacked if he does not do at least three or four versions of this.
Yeah, I'd be down for a Scourge for sure.
Yeah. So fingers crossed that this turns out nicely. Seth, thanks for bringing this up. As I said, like, World's Just a Toys World's Smallest Six Shot has reignited my love for these things. So this grabbed me by the collar.
Dan invoking the World's Smallest Soundwave, that little tape that he came with also transformed.
Yep.
That tiny little goofy Ravage.
Yeah, it was. I don't have that one. I remember messing around with somebody else's at BotCon and just seeing that, like, the tape door opened and the tape went inside. And I was like, wow. Just blew my mind. I didn't know that tape transformed too, so that's even more nuts.
It doesn't transform much, but
things change on it.
Yeah, things fold, and it's the size of a potato chip crumb. I remember actually one of the earliest hoax threads I can remember on TFW that had a lot of mileage was a guy who claimed that he just ate his world's smallest sound wave because it fell into his bowl of stew, and he didn't notice it was in there until he was eating it, so he swallowed. And now he has to get it stomach pumped, and he was so upset. This was like early 2000s era on the boards. I always remember that story because I just always imagine this guy with this gaping, huge, like bullfrog like mouth just piling in a huge bowl of stew and just swallowing his toy. I don't know where that came from.
I can imagine swallowing the Ravage by accident, but.
And that's what not everyone
the
said.
Sound wave.
That's what everyone in the thread said. They're like, how did you do that? You fool. And then eventually everyone figured out that there's no way he was being serious.
I don't chew my food.
That's what he said. He's like, I like my stew a lot, so I just swallow it whole. Yeah, world's smallest stuff. I'm way behind it. At any convention I go to, world's smallest six shot is such a Marvel little toy. I kind of want to just carry it in my pocket. wherever I go. So if you're coming to TFCon, I'm going to wave it at you, because someone will probably have it for sale. Dan, what is your new picture pick?
Well, even though I'm not crazy about the new Transformers Prime Beast Hunter stuff, I do kind of like this new Sharkticon Megatron, so I'm going to kind of highlight that. We've gotten the official super clear image posted on the boards, and something about it, I'm kind of digging. I think, you know, it's just the crazy Sharkticon colors, the really, you know, bright blue, green, some purple in there. Even like how there's kind of almost a Sharkticon looking face and jaw that, you know, becomes part of Megatron's chest. And it looks like there's even like a unique faction symbol there that, I mean, I can't quite make it out in this picture, but it definitely looks different. So, yeah, I think this one's kind of cool. I don't know if it's enough to make me jump into Beast Hunters or not, but I do like the color scheme going on here.
I bet you it won't be hard to find it for $15 to $20 within a couple months of its release if you do still feel warmed up to it just as a weird, like, one-off toy. Also, I didn't tell you this when we were in the pre-planning. This is literally the third week in a row that this thing has come up in new pick picks. Still new.
Because we talked about it a couple episodes ago when it was just the much more awesome Seafoam Green prototype.
And I still like that Seafoam Green, but I like how close they came to the Sharkticon scheme here.
I could totally pick something else, and you could edit all that nonsense out.
No, I like it. I like the idea that this thing has become like the hottest item on the podcast. Because it's so dumb, but it's so great. Like I said before, it's like, okay, how do we add... like, some of these Beast Hunters designs... slap some spikes on him. There we go. But yeah. This one, it's like they just went all out. They're like, no, we're not just going to make him spiky. Dan, did you see the crocodile knockout?
No, so I must have missed that.
There's the Beast Hunter's knockout is almost as genius as this. They gave him a lot of crocodile oriented stuff and painted the sides of his alt mode crocodile green, so he literally looks like a crocodile car.
Huh.
And this is taking that to the next level, and I love it because it's embracing the idea wholeheartedly.
And I think that's a good way of putting it. Why I'm not feeling what we've seen before. Like, I've never been crazy about beast designs, period. So, like, the Ripclaw, you know, all those, you know, the actual, like, the new, the beast things, I'm not really crazy about. And then the stuff that was brought over from, you know, oh, here's our other characters, here's Wheeljack, here's Optimus Prime. Yeah, let's just put spikes on them. It's like, I'm not feeling that. But this, yeah, is an awesome departure, and it's so crazy that it just hits all the right buttons for me.
And if there are folks out there who don't like this for any given reason, be it Seth's preference to Seafoam Green, or you think this is complete nonsense, that's totally cool. I'm not going to fight you on that. But this being...
I just think it was easy. It was the easy choice to make it predominantly black.
Yeah. I'm curious what it's going to look like when it's not Photoshopped. Like, is it a black plastic or is it a gray plastic? Because right now it's in a state where I really wouldn't be able to tell you because of the filters that are put on these images.
They should have painted them to look like a straight bass.
Straight bass?
Bass. Oh. Or a sea bass.
I love sea bass.
Or a rainbow trout.
Well, I mean, the repaint potential here is super high because at least this physical design will exist. He's got to track clown down fish. The right guy.
Clownfish. Like Nemo from Finding Nemo. Clownfish. Yeah.
We just got to turn to, like, DairyCon and get their hands on this thing.
Yeah. Well, then wouldn't they just paint it like cow?
Not necessarily.
Cow. It's a cowfish.
But they have the sensibilities that I think would take this in the right direction. Those dudes over there. My own new picture pick is there's actually really a couple of links that can work for this, but it's pretty much the Transformers Go stuff, and not the Beast Hunter side, but the Japanese original three-man combiner team side. which are super Japanese, and they look like Brave toys, and they have the most Japanese names. Like, the first one is called Kanzen, and then another one's called Jinbu, and another one's called Gando, and that's as Japanese as it gets, because that's Japanese. So there are three guys, a police car, a fire truck, and a jet. That's already very brave, because those are three vehicles, or vehicle types, that show up in Brave a lot. Emergency vehicles, police cars, and jets. These guys combine exactly like God Max from X-Kaiser, the first Brave series, but they also have the Getter Robo and Getter Robo Go specifically gimmick, where it's a three-stack combiner, and each three of these guys can occupy any of the three positions in the three-stack combiner. For Transformers fans, if this is all foreign to you, just take JRX, a rail racer from RID, the bullet train combiner, and imagine if any member of that team could fill out any position that the three members are in that combination, and there you go. These guys, looks like they're going to have lights and sounds as well. They're all a little bit pricey. They're around 40 to 50-something each, with the jet being the cheapest one. There's going to be another three-man combiner team in this, at least one more. And this all is super cool, and then we got an image of an advertisement showing pictures from the anime series they're doing that a lot of us have been curious about. The main thing we've been curious about is this going to be a full-on original Japanese Transformers anime, or is this going to be, like, a clip online? So it sounds like it's going to be a clip. It's going to be packed in with a magazine. But we have this promo image showing two Japanese kids and two of the three-man combiners. The one on the left is the one I've been talking about. The one on the right is apparently the evil three ninja robot combiner, which may or may not have the same hot swappable gimmick. Anyway, I'm looking at all this stuff, and I think this looks super fun. I am a Brave fan. I have been a Brave fan for years, so this is right up my alley. This is anime as hell, so if you are more into stuff like animated and Prime, this will probably not tweak your interest nearly as much. All I'm hoping is that the anime is as complete, like, BS, neketsu, hot-blooded as it gets. Like, I just want these, I want it to be, as is on Twitter, what I wanted out of this was no more than 13 episodes where every episode ends on an even higher level of everyone screaming and everything getting ludicrous and epic. And it looks like the bad guy kid is literally a ninja, so there you go. He has a Naruto head plate on his headband and everything. These guys are coming out in June, at least the first three are, and I am super, super curious how they're going to turn out. The pictures of the actual toys, I find it's hard to tell if they're any good. There's also, by the way, some Beast Hunter toys in here, namely a redeco with a new head of Laserback is one of the villain toys, I think, called Gaidora. But the actual combiner toys, they look like they could be okay, but there are enough weird things in their engineering that they also might feel kind of dated. And I'm kind of happy and excited to be going in so utterly blind on something that could be so very retro in many different ways. So I really wanted to highlight this right now, because it's going to be out in a couple months, and I kind of want to hold off on talking about it more until the actual toys are out. Seth, I don't know how much this has been crossing your desk, but what do you think of this whole Transformers Go original Japanese content approach?
I think it kind of reminds me of a little while back where Hasbro and Takara were kind of doing a little different things.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't so much on the same page, and they were sort of taking what they wanted from the other one and repurposing it. Because it just seems like Hasbro was like, we're doing Beast Hunters, and then Japan was like, ah, maybe we'll use some of it, but we're doing this other thing instead. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Mm.
It just sort of seems interesting that with only one season of Prime to go, it's almost like Japan is going, yeah, we're done with that. That's not really working for us.
It's worth noting also, we just got the promo video for Japan's release of the actual Beast Hunter toys under the Go line, and there's a narration giving the story. Their version of the story of Beast Hunters is also incredibly anime. It's about how long ago Optimus Prime and the Autobots sealed Predaking away in a disc in the core of the Earth, and now Predaking has escaped, and so him and his Predacon army have to be sealed away into their discs again, and the Autobots are donning their Preda armor to fight them across the galaxy. Like, they just... There's a whole scale ignoring the cartoon, it feels like, in the promo material.
Well, at least those armor pieces mean something in the Japanese version, where apparently they're not going to be represented in the show, the American show.
Yeah, so Japan just ran with, they ran with it in the very anime direction. The bad guy creatures must be sealed away in a collectible object is super Japanese. In terms of like a toy gimmick and or tie-in fiction for toys. And I was kind of smiling when I saw that. Like, I heard the word for seal and they showed these discs and I was like, oh man. Dan, how are you feeling about this very Japanese Transformers approach?
I think it's pretty neat. I mean, I'm into Japanese stuff quite a bit, and I think this is kind of refreshing. It's cool to see that something different is going on over there, whereas, you know, the last few years we've just taken what we've released over here and gave it like a shinier paint job over there. This is like just, hey, let's do something just a bit different. And I'm also a fan that it's kind of, you know, while it's different, it's also a throwback to, you know, pretty much a throwback to Brave. And I mean, what's not to love about that? I think it's really cool. So if anything about Beast Hunters excites me, it's this. And I mean, you know, it's Go, so it's not really Beast Hunters in the true sense of the term, but I'm kind of excited to see where they're going with this. What happens after this, you know, when Beast Hunters has come to its end, what's next? Are they going to continue this on for a little bit until they get movie toys over there or what, you know? Exciting possibilities, man.
And it also makes me wonder if maybe Takara Tomy is and maybe just Transformers on the whole are doing even better than they were before in Japan to be able to have a somewhat pricey, like electronics backed, clearly like kid oriented set of Transformers coming out that are also somewhat original. Like, when Japan's done original stuff for the last few years, it's mostly been like small runs of collector toys or like weird tie-ins with like baseball cap labels or stuff like that. So to see go ahead.
It kind of seems like a filler line. Like, the majority of the figures for Go are going to be repurposed Beast Hunter stuff. Clearly they're not interested in the third season of Prime because they've created their own fiction, but the only thing that seems to be supporting that fiction is this short clip that they're going to do animate. And then it appears to only be these 2-3-man teams that constitute the original figures for it. And
do we know
what scale they are? Are they deluxe size figures or what are they?
I don't think we know a scale yet. And there have been other figures solicited, but we only have names. And given how like Ghidorah is just Laserback with his alternate head sculpt, it's hard to tell if anyone with a weird name is going to be a new toy or just like one of the Predacons or something like that.
I think there are going to be very few new toys. I'd be surprised if there's going to be more than these 3-man combiner teams.
I will too. I like the way it looks to me is it's going to be these couple of 3-man combiner teams. There's one more solicit that might be a third 3-man combiner team. And everything else sounds like repurposed or new head sculpt, redecoed Predacons. But the weird thing is also, so Go is this, but Go is also their Beast Hunter toys. And it seems like there's nothing tying them together in either of the fictions. And I think they're probably still going to air the third season of Prime over there with the dub they've been doing. So I'm interested to see like this weird, like kind of,
well, isn't that going to contradict the fiction?
Not necessarily, because they're fiction.
Are there discs that the Predacons are being sealed up in?
The fiction is written in a way, someone pointed this out, the fiction that they just shared for the Beast Hunter toys is written in a way where you could construe it as having happened after season 3 of Prime. But it's tricky, and I don't think anyone's posted a full translation yet, so a lot of this is kind of bullet points. And just people saying, I heard them say this and I know what this means. So I kind of like how nebulous Transformers Go is at the moment in terms of like what it actually is, because it clearly is still kid-oriented. These combiners look like kid-oriented toys, and I don't mean that as an insult. I'm just saying these aren't, like, Alternity or Masterpiece or anything. So I'm looking forward to June and July when all this stuff starts hitting and we can start, you know, concreting exactly what this is that's coming out. And, yeah, and also it feels nice and fresh. Much like how Prime felt nice and fresh when it came out and started up. And I agree, it feels nice also that it's fresh in that it's a Japanese line that's not just our toys. That's kind of cool to see again outside of the collectory stuff. That's also all of our new picture picks. So, I'm going to move on here to a bit of TFCon news. We don't have a picture, but the first profile for one of the exclusive toys has been shared. It's for a guy called Vanguardian from the Heroic Gobits. And there's, you can read the thing. It's a lot of stuff using the word Gobit. And the best part of this bio, and Daniel has tried to play this down as though he didn't really care, but I think that if he doesn't take full credit for this, then this bio has become bigger than its author. There's a name in here which is the analog name to Psykill, and it's the best name I've seen for a robot all year. It's Bike Murder. So the idea is that there's some villainous character called Bike Murder who is running around being a bad guy, and I know this wasn't the intention, but I'm actually 100 times more interested in getting some kind of Bike Murder toy now than anyone else that they're...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, the only third-party motorcycle is the Perfect Effect RC, and they probably aren't hooked up with those guys because no one knows how to talk to Perfect Effect outside of Facebook. So now I'm kind of bumming myself out because I'm like, I just want there to be a toy of a guy called Bike Murder. Not to say Vanguardian is a bad name. It's clever. Derek J. Wyatt posted that I should be throwing a fit because it should have just said Van Jealous, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. So this guy is apparently a modified Gobit. He's talented, smart, tactical, and courageous. He's got an optional battle mask and a shock gun. I'm gonna guess he turns into something that looks like a van, because that's how Gobit names work. So you know, those are your clues, I suppose. I'm the part where it said optional high impact battle mask made me start going like, I have a feeling I know what this is. But apparently, the second profile is going to be revealed before May 1st, so they have 3 days from the time of this recording. Anyway, the TFCon is coming up July 26th, 28th. Dick Gauthier is on the way over. Seth's work is a bunch of horseradish. So Seth, I know you're not going to be able to make it, and that's friggin' sucks. Yeah. But how you set that aside, like, how are you feeling about the bio here?
It's funny. I mean, Captain One.
Yeah.
But like with how analog Captain One and Bike Murder are, I was just sitting here racking my brain. Like, I'm not a GoBot expert, but I'm trying to remember, like, is there a GoBot with a straight analog name like that that you could clue off of more?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I kind of wish I knew more about GoBots now.
Wait, what is the question?
So Bike Murder is like Psykill.
Right.
And Captain One is like Leader One.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a GoBot name that is that close to Vanguardian?
Yeah, it's Vanguard. And I just linked you guys in the chat. There's a GoBot named Vanguard.
Well... Hey, look at the shape of that alt mode. Let's think about third-party toys for a second
here. There you go. I would bet that we're probably looking at some form of this.
All Daniel did was add 3 letters to the name?
I like how that's what you're upset about. You're like, oh my god, he didn't get clever enough with the name.
And, well, it's more so the fact that okay, so that's the name here, right? Then people are all saying Bike Murder's so good. He's like, ah, it's just a thing I thought up. And it's like, dude, it's like degrees exponentially more cool.
Bike Murder is golden.
Oh! I can't believe he's not owning Bike Murder more. I was almost going to get mad at him on Twitter and go, like, you should be, like, riding this rock star wave as hard as you can. The entire Twitter loves the name Bike Murder, and you're sitting here just waving your hand like it's nothing. It's like, dude.
And you know, if they can't get a, you know, perfect effect or any other kind of motorcycle that, you know, can represent Bike Murder, they need to make, like, TFCon Bike Murder pint glasses or t-shirts or something. Bike Murder has to, you know, we have to give that to the fans. We want Bike Murder.
Get me an art print. Josh Perez print of Bike Murder. I will buy two.
Yes.
Right now. Agreed. I'm laying that out here right now.
Just take the Deluxe GoBot Cycle, rip off that transformation, add a couple more points of articulation. You got an awesome figure.
Just print it in Shapeways.
Bike Murder.
Go print me a Bike Murder. But yeah, Vanguard, I really like Vanguard's color scheme here. I wasn't expecting it to be this kind of neat, like, cold silver and black, if that's translated to whatever toy they use. Because there are actually a couple of toys that I could see using that alt mode, although the optional battle mask part is really making me think I know what it is now.
Yeah, I think so too.
Are you thinking the Iger, not Brawn?
I'm trying to think if any other third-party toy has an optional battle mask.
Yeah, because that head spins around. Now, what about the, if we're looking at Iger stuff, and TFCon has a history of using Iger stuff in recent past, what about the Gears mold? Because that also has a mouth head and a mast head.
For this year,
does that look closer in vehicle design?
It's a little bit squatter, and I'm not sure if, because I mean that mold I think actually looks cooler than the Brawn mold, but I don't think it's in a position to go into production yet.
Throwing options out there.
Oh, I mean, like this alt mode, I'm looking at this alt mode, and I'm actually, my immediate thought when I see that alt mode is Grindrod or Aurora from Toy World. Aurora actually may be a bit closer, even though it's not nearly as angular, and it's not really much of a van. But this color scheme, if the main thing I think that would really reel me in here is if they can get across that weird logo on the hood.
Like, well, that Brawn has the M type logo on its hood, which isn't too removed from that. You can paint it to be a little more similar.
Yeah, I'm getting really sold on this now. Like, if the sculpting's there, I'd happily paint that in.
Well, they could even paint it partly in. Like, maybe you don't get that silver V, but, like, where the black and red parts are, you could get something very similar on the hood of that Brawn.
No, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, if either of those pieces of livery can be shown somehow on an exclusive version, I would be way, way more into it. I mean, hell, Repro Labels could just do something, too. But.
And now, we kind of talked about it a little before we started recording, but Iger also did that Ironhide Ratchet. But,
yes, they did.
I mean, those are much bigger, more expensive figures, so even though they are more van-shaped, it's maybe a little pricier than what TFCon is going to go for.
And this battle mask thing, I think, was a humongous clue. Because that really narrows down the options.
So do we think that our other reveal is going to be one of the other GoBits mentioned in this little summary here? Or do we think it's going to be somebody completely different?
I'm knowing Daniel and the other folks working on this stuff, it probably will be another GoBit. Because over the last couple of years, TFCon has very clearly found a love and found that its attendees tend to have a love for this kind of weird ongoing fiction they've been building. Of all these, like, really weird characters who are kind of irrelevant to each other being made relevant to each other.
Yeah, but I don't know if they could do Captain One or
Bike Murder. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, there isn't anything that can fill that Captain One or bike murder.
Well, bike murder's out because Daniel keeps talking about how he just thought of it in the last second, so clearly there's been no toy thought put behind it.
Misinformation campaign.
Daniel is the next Michael Bay. Daniel's the Michael Bay of third-party convention-oriented toys.
He's the Seth bald Michael Bay.
Nice.
Also, that Braun has a shotgun, which isn't too different than a shotgun.
Oh, god damn it, you're right.
Pronunciation.
Yep, there you go. I
didn't even think about that.
And I don't know about you guys, but this is one of the first times that we didn't have prior knowledge to one of these things, so.
And we're all kind of Sherlock.
It's not like we're dropping hints from stuff that we were told in confidence, like. I can't speak for anybody else. I don't know nothing.
I'm just looking at, like, you guys are laying out the clues here pretty clearly because I missed the shotgun thing and I didn't know what Vanguard looked like. The only thing that caught me was optional high-impact battle mask because that super narrowed it down in my mind. We're all like little Sherlock Holmeses here.
Yay!
Bunch of Benedict Cumberbatches.
What?
That's right.
I wanted to be Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes.
No! You want to be Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes, you have to play on the west side of the playground.
Because when I think of Sherlock Holmes, I think of a short American.
Doing a British accent.
Yes. Yes, rather.
Rather.
I find it very weird, the idea of Dr. Watson being taller than Sherlock Holmes. I can't wrap my head around that.
It was weird to me for the first bit of the first movie, but I got used to it due to the chemistry.
Of the chemicals you took before going into the movie? The hallucinogenic drugs?
All dat opium. Because I'm Asian.
Why'd you have to take it there?
Yeah, it was already
Asians
on topic.
Asians can do meth.
Yeah, but Sherlock Holmes plus opium means that I'm a real fan. True fans do opium when they watch Sherlock Holmes. Dan, I meant to ask, how are your TFCon prospects looking?
They kind of go on a bit of a roller coaster themselves. I've gotten wife approval, so that's good. it's just I've started a second job recently, so things might be up in the air. I don't think it'll be difficult getting the time off to go up to TFCon. It's just I'm already taking a lot of time away from the family doing the two jobs.
Yeah.
But you do kind of need to get that time with, you know, your friend. Anybody who's been to conventions knows it's like that's kind of like that whole second family at the convention. And you have to have that annual time with that group of people. Just
wow,
like,
way to rub it in. Make me feel worse.
So, yeah, I might try and go.
Yeah, I keep like trying to keep track of who's because it seems like a lot of people's plans have been getting kind of thrown like left and right for everything.
The thing is like I had been going to San Diego for years, and this year, actually I guess the last 2 years, the conventions for Comic-Con and TFCon were like only a week or two apart, so it made it difficult to do both. So last year I said, you know, instead of doing San Diego, I'm going to do TFCon. And I had such a good time that that's pretty much what's going to happen this year if I go. But now I'm also weighing the possibility of doing New York Comic-Con later in the year.
I know New York Comic-Con has kind of shown up as like the third wheel of everyone's convention plans of late.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
Well, cause all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people are near it.
Yeah.
So, and I was super mad that I couldn't make it last year, and it was entirely because of scheduling. And that weekend was just literally the worst weekend of that month. And I was like, I can't go because I'm doing all these projects that are happening now, regardless of whether I'm here or not. Yeah, man, conventions.
That's another show I looked into going to, but is unavailable for me to get the time off.
I like whenever you tweet that, like I get madder and madder because I'm like, this just doesn't.
Yeah, it's everything.
Ah!
I was talking to my dad about going back to Erie, Pennsylvania, where I was born, because they're having this tall ships thing. Can't get that week off, because it's too close to a holiday.
Yeah.
Remember, we're going to have a layover in Chicago. I could have met up with Chicago people one night.
Ugh.
Whatever.
sucks, man.
Whatever.
Anyway, that's Vanguardian's profile. There should be another TFCon profile up in time for the next recording, so we'll probably cover that one too. And if there's no bike murder expansion of the fiction in there, I'm Daniel. You're on watch. All right. I'm looking at you right now. Just saying, over there in Quebec.
Let's start our own toy company and steal the name Bike Murder.
Hey, you know what?
If the guy steal the IP of Cycle's design, and we'll steal Bike Murder.
If the guy who came up with the name Bike Murder is not intensely proud of the name Bike Murder, then I'm taking it, because Bike Murder is bigger than one person. Bike Murder is an ideal. Anyway, that having been said, I'd like to talk about the ongoing, because I didn't know this was going to be ongoing, the now three articles that Gizmodo has put together about how Transformers are made. These are all put together by a gentleman named Kyle Wagner. I don't know who he is, but he's the author of these articles. And he went by Rhode Island, where a bunch of us went back in 07. And he has been sharing so much good information. Last week, last week's podcast just went up because I was slow editing it. But last week I said, like, if you are actively avoiding these articles, please explain why. And I'm gonna say that again. If you are still avoiding these articles, you're insane. Because there is some really cool stuff in here. I didn't know that Hasbro, they don't just have 3D printers in-house. They have 3D printers that can print a joint. Not like a marijuana joint, but like a knee joint.
Oh, man, that would have been sick.
That's coming in 2023, not 2010-3. But yeah, their 3D printers are apparently super, super high level, like the highest level. And they are talking about things like the fact that these printers can print, like, articulated interlocking pieces. Read the article. There's videos attached to each one. The videos are the things on the front page, and I've gotten a message on Twitter that apparently it is worth noting, like, there are articles that go with those videos that contain a lot more than what's in the videos. They also talk a lot to the gentleman who does the Paint Masters, Mark Maher, and he's talking about how cool it is, like, when he looks at the back of a box, like, you can say, hey, I painted that, and in the back of my head is like, yeah, I bet you're saying, also, like, it's funny how they covered it with so many filters that, what are they doing to my poor artwork? But maybe he's the one who does the filters, I don't know. But watching him painting Predaking, like, I would just love to, I'd love to see these paint masters on display somewhere, because I think that's some legit art going on there. They talked to a guy who does some CAD design, showing the articulated CAD model for Ultimate Beast Hunters Optimus Prime. Today, there was an article that went up talking about how Transformers got more complicated in part due to the live-action movies and having to get those toy designs across in the physical form, and how right now Transformers is kind of moving back towards being simpler and more intuitive. Well, and here's the thing, though. I think the thing they're leaving out, which is what I've said for ages this last couple of years, is that Transformers has taken all the super complication of the first two movie lines and moving it into, like, being that complicated, but making all the complicated parts not be on the user end. So it's like, it feels simple to transform, but it's really complicated, how it was put together. Like, I guess a great example would be, apparently Triple Changer Springer is very intuitive to transform. I haven't looked at how he works yet, cause I'm waiting till I get mine. But anyway, they're talking about how they're basically confirming that that is a thing, that the movies caused them to have to take the complication levels to another level, and that they're dialing that back now. They do show a kind of an odd comparison, because they're like showing as what we used to have as G1 Bumblebee, and then what we have now as I think that's the Dark of the Moon, or it's either Dark of the Moon or Revenge of the Fallen Bumblebee, but the one of the complicated deluxes. And there have been complicated toys between then and then, and people in the comments section of this article were super fast to point that out, because I guess they really want to show that they also know what Transformers are or something. But all this chatter is me trying to convince you, the listener, if you haven't yet, to go and look at these articles, because knowing how the Transformers toys are made, I think, is incredibly positive to being able to enjoy the toys even more. And it also answers many like, why don't they questions if you know this stuff? Like, you're able to speculate more educatedly as to the why don't they questions. So anyway, I already ranted a lot about this, and I'm ranting more. Seth, what do you think about what Gizmodo's up to here?
I think it's cool. I haven't read the articles myself, not because I'm actively avoiding them, but just because I haven't made the time. I mean, it sounds like I should, just because I still think these current figures are oversimplified. I mean, it's one thing to make it intuitive. It's another thing to have giant, big hollow spaces that in the past you easily would cover with a flap. So, yeah, I mean, I'll try to find the time to check them out.
At least the first one. I think that the most value was in the first one. But the second one's bit about the 3D printers kind of blew my mind still.
Yeah, I don't know how you can keep asserting that they are the highest end printers, but can't make a joint if they're the highest end.
I have no follow-up to that. I don't even want to try. I'll just damage the beauty if I try to say anything else. Dan D. Fuzz, what do you think about these Gizmodo articles?
Well, like Seth, I haven't had the time to actually dive into them. You know, like, I haven't had the time to watch the videos. They come up while I'm working my other job, and I see it, and I kind of skim through the article, but I haven't made the time. Like, I've bookmarked them at work to say, okay, go back and watch these later. But the little bit I've looked at, like, the imagery and the little bit of text I've skimmed throughout the articles, it actually gives you a little bit more respect and appreciation for this, which is saying a lot because, like I said, I don't really care for the Beast Hunters line at all, but it's like I definitely respect what's going into it. And yeah, the 3D printer stuff is amazing. It's really cool, like, just everything they can do with that stuff. It's just, I mean, I know we've talked about this before when we're talking about Shapeways, I think, last time I was on. It's just mind-blowing. Like the picture of the wrench that they made out of these 3D printers is just cool. It's like a little monkey wrench. It's just awesome. Like, so yeah, I need to actually dig in and watch all the video that goes along with this, cause, and just based off of your response to it alone is enough to, that should make anybody who hasn't seen it yet start watching them.
The 3D printer stuff, one reason why it blew my mind so much is I'm like, this is, you know, this is industrial level 3D printing that is outside of Shapeways, but sometime in the next 5 years, this is probably what Shapeways or an analog to Shapeways will have available. And so I'm sitting there looking at everything that all these Shapeways toy makers are, or you know, add-on parts makers are doing themselves. And I'm like, imagine these guys being able to just model the joint in CAD and send that off and have like an assembled joint done for them in the printer. Like, once that science is all starting off, it's going to be kind of rickety and loosey-goosey, but once it's more settled in, like, there's some really cool opportunities here for the indie toy maker that I'm seeing. And absolutely, I said this last week, but every toy collector has at some point readily dismissed a toy as ass crap. Like, easy example right now is Deluxe Arachnid. You know, everyone looks at that toy. 99% of the people looking at that toy will go like, this thing is garbage, and toss it over their shoulder. And I've done similar things, but I think it's really important to know how much work goes into any given toy. You know, the 8 to 24 months that goes into a Transformers toy. So at least when you're doing that with the knowledge in your head of what went behind it. So that at least, you know, if you are going to say yes or no to a toy, at least you're saying that and you're knowing how much work went into it. So you're able to, you know, appreciate and respect that side of it while making your decision. I think it really is important that this information is out there and more known so that everyone can better appreciate or even depreciate a toy. Because it gets rid of the nebulous side of like, oh, why didn't they just ... which we've, you know, everyone has said at some point. And having more knowledge about how all this stuff works means that the conversations can be deeper and they can be more grounded in some kind of reality rather than just, like, pure speculation. And I want one of those 3D printers. So Santa Claus, I hope you're listening. Because I've been a good boy.
A friend of mine was talking about he might get a maker bot in the near future.
I've eyed those many times. I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast, I actually put in on the Kickstarter for I don't know if I told you about this, Seth, but it's a company who making this. It's like a soldering gun, but instead of injecting solder, it ejects ABS plastic. So it's basically like a 3D printer that's handheld. So you're like drawing Weird. Plastic. So I was so intrigued by it, I went in on the Kickstarter, and apparently I will have one possibly by December. So
I'm having trouble imagining how you would use that.
The easy example is that they had a template so you could pretty much draw the components for an easy-to-assemble Eiffel Tower. Like a little Eiffel Tower model. And ejecting ABS plastic out, one of the things I was thinking of was immediately I'd want to grab like a Junker Transformer or something and just see if, like, can I just literally draw sculpting onto this Transformer and will it stick? Or can I use this to technically, like, quote-unquote solder broken plastic parts together, given that it's all ABS. There's a lot of applications of it I want to test out on actual toys, but I also just like the idea of, like, you can literally just, like, hold the trigger and lift the thing, start the thing on the table, lift it up, and just start, like, drawing a tower, in a way. That's kind of deconstructing the process, but if you look it up, I gotta go find the name of the thing, but they have a lot of videos up about how this works. And it's ABS plastic and another plastic. I can't quite remember what it's called. But ABS is like the easy one to use. It is called the 3D Doodler, like the 3D Oodler. So it's the3ddoodler.com is the site that should have the information on it. And, here we go. They have actual pre-orders up now because their Kickstarter worked. So if you want to just pre-order one, it's $100, and they think they're going to start shipping it for pre-orders happening now, sometime in February next year. And it could be a total piece of garbage. I have no idea, but the very concept of it, I think, is really cool, and the videos were really neat. So I don't think it's going to be a piece of garbage. And it's another extension of the whole idea of 3D printing and. Stuff like MakerBots. I love watching videos of MakerBots. It makes me feel like it's the future.
Yeah, I'm looking at the thing now.
It's really...
I still don't know about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell anyone.
It's weird. I mean, this dude's just like making a cube by just pulling up. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like the customizer's best friend, or it's not going to be like I can draw a toy or anything, but it's so weird that I was unable to resist. It really piqued my curiosity. We should move on from there, though, and into one more topic, which is a listener question. We've got a listener question from Whelp D, or I guess Whelped? I'm not sure. He says, "Hello, Vangelis and the awesome podcast crew." That's nice to say. "We all must do things we do not enjoy to allow us to feed our plastic habit. So my question is, what is the worst job you have had to endure to allow you to continue your Transformers collecting? Keep up the very entertaining work. Yours, slowly going insane. Whelped. P.S. Rider click." I get it. So, Seth, what is the least enjoyable job you've had to do to... among other things, continue collecting Transformers or just figures?
Yeah, I don't really get this question. Like, is this person implying that, like, oh, I took this job to make money to collect Transformers, or?
I'm forming it in my head as just, like, what's the worst job you've done while you were a toy collector?
I've really only ever had one real job.
Mm.
I've been working where I'm working for 20 years now. And when I started working there, I wasn't a toy collector. Mm. I kind of came back around into that much later. Yeah, I don't think I have a story that fits this question.
Mm.
I mean, there's never been a time where it's like, oh man, I had this job, but I wasn't making enough money, so I mowed lawns on the side. Like, I don't have anything like that. Or
I had to shovel corpses into a truck.
I was selling my body on the street. that would be pretty awful. I think I would rather not collect toys.
No, it's worth it.
I mean, unless all my customers were hot ladies, but that doesn't seem like it would work out that way.
Enter the debate.
I just don't think I have an answer for this question.
Dan, what about you? Have you got an answer for this gentleman?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. Not been at the same job for 20 years or nothing like that. I mean, I've actually worked several jobs since I've gotten back around into toy collecting. But none of it was, you know, as a result of toy collecting. It's like, oh, I need to make ends meet because all this other money's going towards toys. And yeah, I mentioned earlier I have a second job now, but it's more
toys.
For fun. I mean, in a way, it is for toys, but it's not a bad job, and it's not. It's for Lego.
It's a toy job.
Yeah,
we were talking about you last week, Dan.
What's that?
You should listen to 248. We were talking about you.
No, oh, all right. I am way behind.
Oh man!
So Aaron,
like, super jealous that that Dan has a Lego job and Aaron has no job?
We were talking about something where Dan came up after a little while.
Oh boy. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, that job was because of my passion for the brand and that hobby. It wasn't because, you know, I'm spending all my money and I need more money. It's a purely a job that is all about just how passionate I am for that hobby. So anything I regret, to, you know, make more money, like maybe selling stuff on eBay, you know, like maybe like, oh, I really wanted this other thing, so I need to sell a few things to make ends meet to get this other big thing. Maybe that would be the closest way I could answer this. But no, I mean, there's not been any horrible job that I worked because of toy collecting.
Yeah, I mean, the way I took this question is just like, I have done some jobs at a time where I would spend some of my money on toys. So that's just more like easily two of the worst jobs I've ever done. Both were not for very long. One of them was when I was working at a movie theater, and I was set up to be going into the projection booth, and a manager dude just kept me in concession. And I'm also just not very good at working service jobs because I am not the person that the manager wants to deal with, because I kept pointing out how things in the processes were not happening with proper expediency and how I thought they could be fixed. Apparently my contribution in that line of inquiry was not very much wanted. Also, just the dude in question was a blithering moron. So that was not a very fun job, because I was also working a really great job at the same time. And I was often, at one point, I was just outright telling the guy, like, man, I'm working this other job that's so much better than here. Let me tell you about it. It's fantastic. So I didn't stay there for very long. And I continued working my other, much more lovely job for about 2 years. The other worst job I had was just it was a one-night temp job, and it wasn't really that bad, but I didn't like it, because I was told, you're going to go to a function at the arena and help serve drinks. So I thought, oh, I'll be sitting behind a table and serving plastic cups of drinks. That should be fun. So I get there, and it turns out it's for, like, some concert, and I would be in the concession stand serving beer, and there was also going to be some planted, like, looks like a 15-year-old who's going to try to get beer so they can see if we're checking people's IDs. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, isn't there, like, a certification I'm supposed to have for this? Like, yeah, serving it right, you have that, right? I'm like, no, I don't, because I was never told I would need that for this. And I'm like, oh, well, just, here, let me show you what to do. So I spent the entire night illegally serving alcohol while there was an agent of the "we make sure you're serving alcohol correctly" bureau buying alcohol, and it was a very stressful evening that I did not enjoy, because I was like, I shouldn't be here. I'm working like I felt like somehow an illegal immigrant into my own town because I was working without the proper certification. But as a result of that job, I also learned how to more properly pour beer from a tap. So I guess there was a small upside. Anyway, I hope we interpreted your question correctly, Whelp D. And yeah, I guess none of us, like, we haven't killed people yet for toys. I mean, I'm eyeing Dan because Dan buys some expensive toys. So
No. I'm not a violent person. That's actually the realm where I've sold stuff on eBay that I was like, well, I want these high-end toys more than these toys. So these guys can go. So, but there's really no regret.
I just want to say, not being a violent person does not preclude murdering for toys. It just means that you don't violently murder people for toys.
Yeah, you could do something more elegant, like poison.
Yeah, or just like a fine needle poke right into that spot in the inner thigh where you make him bleed out. I forgot the name of it now.
Hey guys, like I said, I'm not a violent person.
Yeah. I poured this drink. I'm fine.
Yeah. And yeah, I haven't really hated any. Well, there was one job I hated, but that was before I was a toy collector, so we won't go into that.
Half them. We're going to take a quick break now. We're going to have an intermission break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some stuff we got this week. I know Dan's got at least one thing he got at C2E2, because I saw the Twitter picture. And whatever else he got this week. We'll find out very shortly, right after this. And does anyone need to use the can?
Four match tonight. The winner to become number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation title. Do you accept?
Finally, The Rock has come back to Pittsburgh. The Rock says this. Does The Rock accept the Boss Man's Challenge hardcore match for the WWE number one contender spot? Well, considering the mood that The Rock is in, you damn right. That's exactly the type of match The Rock wants. Exactly the type of match that makes The Rock's bacon sizzle. So you damn right you got...
Excuse me.
Oh. Speaking of bacon,
are you aware that the car that hit Stone Cold was registered in your name?
Of course, jabronis, The Rock is aware. If you wouldn't have been aware yesterday and not at Dunkin' Donuts stuffing your faces with all the donuts, The Rock says this. He called it in yesterday that The Rock's car was stolen. So The Rock just wants to know, are you going to arrest The Great One?
No, you're not under arrest. We just have some questions to ask you.
Exactly, because there is no reason to arrest The Great One. The Rock says this. You have the nerve to come in front of The Rock and interrupt The Rock, and you two jabronis don't even have enough class to introduce yourself? What is your name?
Detective.
It doesn't matter what your name is! The Rock says this. Right now, as The Rock speaks, there are literally millions of Rock's fans, and if you all just know your role, shut your mouth. You, and especially you, in 4 seconds, they will all chant The Rock's name. Now, seeing as you jabronis really want to find out who is driving The Rock's stolen car, well, The Rock has one question for you. Write this down. Do you like donuts?
Sure, we like donuts.
What's your favorite donut?
Jelly.
Oh, you like jelly. Well, jelly's a good one. The Rock says this. Write this down. When you leave here, go down to Dunkin' Donuts. Get the biggest jelly donut you can find. Write it down. Hold that jelly donut up. Squeeze all the jelly out. Squeeze all the jelly. Write it down. You like writing things down. Squeeze all the jelly out. And then write this down. You don't want to forget this. Turn that sumbitch sideways and stick it straight up your candy ass. So the Rock Rock says this: if you don't write anything else down, you definitely want to write this down in big, bold letters. If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
Hey, Seth. What you get this week?
On topic, I got the Masterpiece Rumble and Buzzsaw set.
Who's getting those?
Who's getting a Rumble and Buzzsaw? Yeah, that's been sitting in my pile of loot for a while. I'd just been waiting for some more stuff to get in my pile of loot, and some more stuff did.
I hear you.
So yeah, you had mentioned the other show ago that just the fact that Buzzsaw's beak is painted makes it just feel different.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. It just seems so much brighter and cartoonish with those, like with the yellow and the beak, and it's good. And I think that mold of the three tape molds is far and away the best. Like, I'm still just amazed with it. I love that mold so much. Yeah, I haven't been so enthusiastic about how something transforms in a long time. Like, every time I transform that mold, one way or the other, I'm just like, this is so rad that the thrusters and guns are built in, and it all looks cool. Like, it doesn't look cruddy, like the Ravage, but that's besides the point. Yeah, it's just, man, they're so good. Then, also on topic, the Impossible Toys exosuit Spike and Daniel.
Oh, I never messed with those.
Right, those were on clearance at BBTS. Mm-hmm. I meant to bring up BBTS so I could tell you exactly what they were marked down to and if they still have them. So I will try to do both at the same time and probably not do a good job of it. Okay, let's see here there. Yeah, so it was $20 for the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were more than that each originally.
I can't remember the original price.
Let me see if I can find them real quick. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, they're still in stock. They originally had them listed as $70 for the set. 70. That, I'm telling you, I never would have spent $70 on these things. $20, you know, not too bad. They're pretty limited. They transform in that the legs kind of flip up in a way that looks like it would hurt a lot, because the knees bend the wrong way. But you know, they're all right. I say for $20, if you want Spike and Daniel from the '86 movie, here you go. $20 ain't a bad price for what these are. They're all right.
How big are they?
They're a little shorter than the Frenzy Ravage or Frenzy Rumble mold from MP.
Okay.
I don't have them in the room. Otherwise, I'd send you a picture real quick, but I could send you a picture later if you really want to see. Yeah, so they're small. They're little glass, or the clear plastic helmets come off. Yeah, they're all right.
Do they feel all right?
Yeah. I mean, they don't really do much. I mean, like, the arms move some and the legs move some, but
like are they rickety at all, or do they feel like, for what they are, built kind of strong?
Well, I find the shoulders feel kind of stiff to the point where I'm a little nervous about twisting them farther than they want to go. Like, yeah. in the picture of them, they have a Big Bad, which I will link you here. They show the arms moving around a lot more than I've, and they just might just need that little extra little bit of tension, and they'll pop free and move more freely. But I'm a little nervous about really forcing the issue. Yeah, they're not super mind-blowing, but I think, I mean, they're kind of neat.
Yeah.
And, you know, for $20, it's not that big of an investment. $70 is a ridiculous price for these things. That I, if I had paid that much money, I would have been mad at myself. Because you can't. Yeah. No. I'm, yeesh. Yeah. So once they were down to 20, I went, yeah, you know what? I'll go for it. And I don't regret going for it.
Cool.
And that is my on topic this every other week.
Ooh. Well, Dan D. Fuzz, did you get any Transformers this week?
I actually did. Oh. I got something from my pile of loot that's been sitting there for a while. I got the Masterpiece Frenzy and Ravage set, MP15. And it says Rumble and Jaguar on there, but
it's Frenzy really,
and Ravage. That's how the Japanese spell it, but it's pronounced Frenzy and Ravage.
I stand strong. I stand strong.
Fair enough. I'm sure they've been talked to death. I'll just bring up a few things that I'm going to mention. I've been kind of avoiding any kind of coverage on these guys because kind of like our buddy Ichabod, I like to kind of experience a toy by myself for the first time, so I want to go into it without any kind of expectations.
And now I imagine I imagine Ichabod now, like, in dark rooms by yourselves, like the one bare light bulb hanging from the ceiling, like, I have to experience this alone. You don't understand. Take the children and leave.
just don't bother me. I'm playing with toys.
Shotgun just on the table.
And then your wife's like, but Dan, it's like, take the children and leave. Me, this Transformer, and this bottle of whiskey got business.
That's an excellent point. Unfortunately, I just recently got to experience these guys like mere minutes ago. I think the engineering on them both is fantastic, just as it was on who came with Soundwave? Was it
Laserbeak
that came? Okay, so as the same with Laserbeak, I think it's got great engineering. If not a little bit more, I guess, simplistic in the transformation. One problem I'm having with my Frenzy is the pile driver on one end doesn't seem to click in very well. So on one side it clicks in, but the other side it does not. So it just kind of sits there.
It's tricky. The thing that I didn't notice for the longest time is the instructions, because there's just a little tiny arrow in a bunch of Japanese. But the pile drivers, you need to, number one, have the elbows pointed up.
Yeah.
And then the pile drivers have to have two kind of holes facing forward above the connection port. Like, if you spin them around, they're sculpted a little bit different on each side. So when you slide them on, there's supposed to be two kind of holes facing forward. Like, very, very small little kind of indents in the sculpting detail. If you check the instructions, you'll probably see there's an arrow pointing at the pile driver, and it's actually pointing at those holes, but it's not very clear.
Okay.
Because it took me, I had them for days, saying to myself and almost saying on Twitter, it's crazy how these things can't lock in. And then I saw that bit in the instructions. I was like, what? And then it locked in and I was like, oh my God. And I like flipped out.
Yeah. It's weird. Cause yeah, one side, I didn't think either of them locked in, and I just locked in one right before I started talking, but the other side does not seem to want to lock in. So
yeah, they're,
I'll mess with it more later.
Yeah. Like the security to have is that they are meant to lock together. So like, it's there. It's just a case of, like, getting used to how it works.
Gotcha. And Ravage, he's kind of cool. I mean, I hate to, like, knock something for, like, all the engineering that went into it. But, yeah, you know, like, minor things. Like, it'd be cool if his jaw opened. Be cool if, like, you know, his neck was a little more poseable. But that's, you know, really nitpicking, given what you get out of this thing is pretty fantastic. So yeah, I mean, that's my Transformers pickup. I had, MP16 pre-ordered as well, but I canceled it, cause I'm gonna take the gamble on the US release, cause I'm planning, if I am able to get it, I plan on buying it anyway. And I already have, you know, one version of like the Condor. You know, I have Laserbeak and I have Frenzy here, so I'm experiencing those molds. So I figure I can wait for repaints of them. So I'm really happy. I have three tapes now to go in Soundwave's chest. I'm set. So pretty cool. And that's my only on topic thing.
I'm waiting for a pile of loot as well, but all of my pile of loot, aside from one thing, is pre-orders. I'm waiting for friggin' Springer and Blitzwing to show up, because I've actually decided on Springer to do the blackout and not know anything about him, or as little about him as possible going in, because I was going to do it for both, but I really wanted to know what the quote-unquote shoulder issue on Blitzwing was. So I watched a video about him, but Springer, I'm just like, I have no idea how he works, and I don't want to know how he works until he's in hand.
One thing that Dan had just said about passing on the MP16 set is, like, that's what I've been harping on since this whole thing started, was the order that they put the tapes out. I thought they should have done the red guy and Ravage last, so each set had something new. Is the MP16 coming out last, it's basically just two repaints.
Yeah.
Where if they had done the red guy and Ravage last, then there would be a reason to get both, because then you're like, oh, I want to get the man-shaped one, and oh, I want to get the cat-shaped one. But now it's like, I could pass on that last one because it's just another man-shaped one and a bird.
Yeah, and it diminished the enjoyment I had of MP16 as well when I got it, finally, because I was kind of like, all right, I finally got this. I have these two toys. I have the other colors, hooray. And it's not like I dislike it, but, you know, it was a very, like, lukewarm reception when it finally got here, and it sucks to have that for, you know, pricey masterpiece box.
And I understand putting Laserbeak in the box with Soundwave, because that's the Condor that everyone recognizes more, because Buzzsaw barely got any play on TV. It was all Laserbeak, and Laserbeak's the star of the show. So it makes sense why they would do that. But the other two pairings are basically what the original G1 release pairings were. And just, I thought it would have been rad if they really stuck to that and had Buzzsaw come with Soundwave. And that would have put more emphasis on people wanting to get the blue guy and Laserbeak, because everyone would have wanted Laserbeak the most.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people might forget that Soundwave originally came with Buzzsaw.
And I was kind of surprised that they didn't do that as well. I mean, that's an excellent point.
I wasn't surprised. I just think it would have been cool if they really stuck to the original release pattern. But, yeah, I wasn't surprised. I understand why you would do it. I just think it would have been like that extra little bit of nostalgic fun if they stuck to the original.
But anyway, yeah, my pile of loot right now is four copies of that 50-cent Jean-Luc Picard figure.
People went nuts for that thing.
No, me and John Spanring went nuts for that thing, and primarily John Spanring.
I thought some other people got in.
Have you seen John's, like, that whole big Twitter picture? That, like, if you go to his main profile, there's a big Twitter picture at the top. Like not your little profile icon, but, like, a big, like, placeholder landing page. It's like 15 Jean-Luc Picards. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he had one, and then he bought 15 more later because he wanted a full squad.
I imagine Joel has employees that like packs up people's orders. I don't think he does it anymore, but I just have this image in my head of Joel just loading up all these Picards in one box. And for a moment, wondering why, and then not caring, just because he's glad to get rid of them. Just like, I wonder who cares? I'm just get them out of here.
And so in my case, I wanted to buy two, and then I thought, well, if I'm buying two, I should buy three. And then my brother said, hey, I kind of maybe would want one. So I was like, well, I'll buy four. And after I bought my four, the status on Picard chains just sold out. So I think I bought the last four Picards. And they've been sitting in a pile of loot for about a month and a half now. But I did get some Transformers. One of the malls that I visited with Kryn had a toy shop that was actually going out of business. So everything in the shop was 30% off. And inexplicably, they had, from Transformers Prime, the Cyberverse Commander Trail Cutter and Hardshell figures. So I got them for $8 each, which ain't too bad. So Trail Cutter's just the Ironhide toy with a new bits. And I like the Ironhide Cyberverse toy a lot. I like it actually more than the Dreadwing. So getting a new version of it, I am not averse to. And it looks pretty cool. But Hardshell is the big news, because he's currently the only toy of the Prime Insecticon design that we have. And he's a Cyberverse toy. And I gotta say, his colors are baffling. And I think they kind of suck. Because it's like they're kind of trying to be like the green and yellow Insecticon, but they're not. And it's like it's sort of a monotone Insecticon from the show, but instead of black and purple, it's green and yellow. But it's like a very muted green and a very dull yellow. So I do not care for the colors very much. But the mold, I really like, and I hope that somehow it comes out in the proper show colors at some point. Unless the show colors really are green and I'm just missing something. The robot mode is really cool. Decently proportioned. He's got a backpack, but it's a well-built backpack. The only problem I have with him is he's got gorilla arms, in that there's an elbow bend, but when you bend his elbows normally, his palms are facing up. It's a Transformers thing that's happened before, and more people can deal with it than me. His transformation into bug mode is really involved and very clean. Feels like, there's more going on here than I'm used to seeing in a Cyberverse Commander toy. It feels more like a proper, like, scout toy. And the bug mode is really cool. The bug mode actually has a really big, kind of spooky face on the head. The head's kind of large and has four eyes and an opening mouth, and it kind of looks like a robot man's, like, if there was an insect robot man, it looks like his head, because it's got, like, teeth and stuff and proper eyes and, like, a nose, but it's also got a beetle horn on the top, and it gets covered up by the front legs when the mouth is closed. I really like the hard shell toy. I don't know if I want to army build it as Insecticons, primarily because the color is wrong, so I prefer just this one-off freak Insecticon that I can just call hard shell. But if it was ever done in black and purple, I would probably buy three. I dig it. This is an easy toy for people to oversell. It's not going to blow your mind. It's just a very good Cyberverse toy. Don't let this become the next Ripclaw, because Ripclaw, I think people have been talking up a decent deluxe as being the second coming of toys, and it's, I don't think it is. And I suspect people might do the same thing with Hardshell. So just go, if you're going to pick up Hardshell, go in knowing that it's a very solid Cyberverse Commander. And I would even say if it was released as a scout toy, it would be a pretty decent scout toy. Also, thanks to Deli Mitchell, Deli underscore Mitchell on Twitter, Bumble Blog N on YouTube. The gentleman sold me, for a very good price, the Autobot Data Discs from Transformers Generations. Now, I've said many times that I've been skipping the Decepticon Data Discs, and I skipped Soundwave and Sound Blaster because I found Autobot Blaster first, and I decided I want to experience this whole system just with the Autobot toys, because it sounds like they did everything better. And now that I've got the four data discs, I'm really glad I went this route, because I've looked at the Decepticon versions, and I think these guys are, like, kind of just better in every way. The little man discs are, of the four, they are the weakest. The transformation's neat. It's just, like, it's not as amazing as the other two, I find. The paintwork is pretty good. I'm kind of jealous of the Japanese fans, because the Japanese release of these Autobot discs looks beautiful. But, you know, the less painted American versions, I still think they're pretty, they got a strong identity. The paintwork on the head on Rewind, for instance, is really sharp for such a small toy done for the American market. So the little dude figures are cool, but I'm glad that I got them as Eject and Rewind rather than Frenzy and Rumble, because I think that they feel better as Eject and Rewind. I got Ramhorn, the one Autobot exclusive mold. He is the beautiful little piece of engineering that I was led to believe. He enacts the spring-loaded disc transformation better than any other figure in this lineup, because you drop him and he turns into a standing Rhino. He's very well done. His disc mode is a bit weaker because it's got a lot more just rhino stuff showing on the outside ridge. So it's not like perfectly round when viewed from the side, but I don't care. He's really fun. And really, in terms of what the best discs are, it's a toss-up between him and Sundor. And I'm going to say Sundor because I've seen Laserbeak, Buzzsaw, and Ratbat. I think Sundor looks better than all of them. And Sundor does the gimmick really well as well. And he's got really good, really shiny paint apps. And the Japanese version, if it uses metallic paint, I'm gonna have a hard time not double buying this guy. Sundor and Ramhorn easily are the best discs of the bunch. And them plus one of the men, I'm going to say Rewind because of More Than Meets the Eye, make up the three discs that I would pretty much always have housed in my blaster. Eject, just I don't know who Eject is. He's the blue one. And Steeljaw kind of sucks. Ramhorn, Sundor, and Rewind get across the best of this gimmick. And I just want to say, you know, many thanks to Bumble Blog and Deli Mitchell for selling them to me at such a friendly bro price. It was loose, so I just got this great envelope in the mail with all these things in their little, like, the goofy kind of CD case thing they come with. It's actually really, really good for shipping them. So it's, now that I've experienced the whole gimmick, like, it's kind of a neat gimmick. It gave me the same satisfaction as when I had Masterpiece Soundwave and all his cassettes lined up. Certainly not anywhere near the same par of toy, but the same sort of satisfaction kind of is there once you've got Blaster and three really good discs all lined up. So, I dig them. And, the last thing I got that was on topic, my Captured Prey order, which was waiting on their long-delayed second half of the Car Crash shipment, finally arrived. So it had Car Crash in it, and, it's really weird messing with Car Crash after messing with T-Bone, because Car Crash is better at some things, but not as good at some things, and they are a weird pair of toys to mess with side by side, but I like them. I think I kind of like Car Crash more. He feels a bit smoother overall in his design. And I mean, he's been talked about many times before, but
yeah, I agree. I lean toward Car Crash. Like if I had to pick one, I would probably pick Car Crash, but I think they're both rad.
Yeah, I agree. Oddly enough, T-Bone's been standing in robot mode on my desk for like a week and a half, but as soon as Car Crash arrived, I've been transforming like both of them over and over again. Like for some reason, having the two of them here has made me more interested in messing with them. And in messing with them, now I'm bummed out that we have no idea what's up with the next three, but, and I certainly don't hope this is the case, but if for some awful reason these were the only two of the team to come out, I think that it is at least good and pleasing that they are two, I think, pretty good standalone toys, or at least they are a very good duo of just like these two car Decepticons.
Don't even suggest the rest of them aren't coming out.
All right, I rescind that whole idea.
I would be so not cool with that.
No, I wouldn't either. I would be pretty mad. But it does, man, it's, now that I've got both of them here, like, now I am really feeling the pain of, like, because before I only had T-Bone. I was like, whatever, I can wait. But now I have two of them here, and I'm like, yeah, where the hell are the other three? Like, the next two limb guys, the finished prototypes, have been on display in some shop somewhere, and that's all we know. And maybe I am getting really spoiled by Mastermind Creations level of communication, or Fans Toys level of communication, but speaking of that, the other thing in the box was my second run Quake Wave. So now I have my proper Quake Wave with his box. And I kind of like his box. But the Quake Wave, he's just as solid as the pre-production version. I haven't been able to mess with the electronics because I went on a walk to look for batteries in my area and I couldn't find any because I was like, I found an eBay auction and I'm going to just hit up this eBay auction because it's cheap and it's in Canada. But I was like, if I can find two CR1025s in walking distance for like up to like I'll spend up to $8 on the two of them, then I will pay that to save the trouble of waiting for batteries in the mail. But there are none in walking distance, so I'm gonna just order these. But yeah, I think between Seth and myself, we've already kind of covered that toy a whole lot on here, but it's still a very solid figure. And I'm looking forward to seeing his electronics back in action. I'm not looking forward to actually installing the batteries because I didn't have to do that when I last had this figure. And I have have heard from everyone that it's not fun. And in fact, because of how unfun the head is, I spent half an hour trolling the internet trying to figure out if I can just get the CR1020 that it was designed for. And I couldn't find anything other than a really shady looking Alibaba listing. So I was
Alibaba.
Yeah, some site called Alibaba. I was like,
okay,
I don't
know. I thought you were being like really culturally insensitive.
No, it was a site called Alibaba.com is what I mean. Oh dear. But yeah, I'm just going to go for the 1025s, and I'm just going to go on Twitter, and I'm just going to go on Twitter when I have the batteries there and just start saying, hey, everyone, please help. As far as I understand,
what I ended up having to do was cut away solder, which was not fun because there was this incredibly thin, delicate looking wire that ran right past where I was trying to cut.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that at all. And I'm really worried about the LED in the gun hand because of the few reports I've seen of people saying that their wires were so tightly attached that sliding the gun for gun mode caused the solder connections to tear.
Hmm.
And I, because I don't have batteries, I have no idea if I've already caused that to happen or not. I do know from looking inside the pre-production one's arm, like I think I could at least tell if that's happened and give it to someone to fix, but yeah, we'll see. The adventure continues, and Quake Wave is pretty good. There's a third run happening. So
yeah, like I have mine set up. Well, not set up. I just have left it out in the living room, and I'll just be watching TV and I'll look over at it and it's standing there on the table. And I just think like, yeah, that's badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean that and Soundwave and the cassettes, like, those things super rekindled. Like I was feeling really down on Transformers for a while. Like I'm just not into what they're doing, but the mainline stuff. But like these kind of things just got me all getting those good positive feelings again.
And this toy is a beautiful companion piece to Soundwave. Like they look natural standing next to each other.
Yeah. Oh, and when you talked about that Spike and Daniel and asking how big they were, like remembering from watching the G1 cartoon, in the rare cases you would see Frenzy or Rumble standing next to a human, I seem to remember they were always slightly taller.
Yeah.
So that would put the Spike and Daniel in scale with the cassettes and Soundwave, if none of the others. I should grab my Red Alert and see how they look compared. They might be too big for Red Alert.
Well, they're wearing bulky suits too.
Yeah, but still.
I'm also trying to look at this guy and figure out, I want to do the thing of painting the inside of his eye hole black when I disassemble the head to put the batteries in.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out if I want to paint the entire inner cavity black or just the very back surface. I'm not sure which. So
I think my thinking would be the back surface. And then if I screwed up and got some paint on the inner cavity, then I just go, oh, fuck it, and just do the whole inner cavity.
Yeah. Oh, farge it, as you just said. I was catching it before anyone starts making remarks.
No, I mumbled a mumble with an F sound in it.
That's right. There's nothing more than that. And by the way, if anyone out there is on the fence for Quake Wave, all I'm going to say is that all of these sounds are here for a good reason.
Get off the fence.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Yeah, there was a moment where I wasn't sure, just because I thought, like, in those early pictures, I thought the purple looked flat. I thought it all looked kind of too uniformed, but in person, it's just, it looks so much better than those early pictures I saw.
Yeah. It's a purple now, that literally does not play nice with lenses or digital imagery at all. Like,
I think I captured it in some of my pictures. I think I got the purple.
He did, but I mean, like,
I took those pictures at a lot of different exposures and camera speeds or shutter speeds. Like, I took a lot of pictures with different manual settings.
Yeah.
And then chose the ones that I thought best represented the color.
That's what I mean. Like it's a purple that's not simple to photograph or videotape.
Yeah, well, I mean, so much of the toy photography that people do, like, there's that whole super clear thing where you have the infinite white background, everything super brightly lit, like, shadows are a curse, you can't have any sort of shadowing, everything has to be super bright, super sharp, and I think that's where that works against this sound wave. It completely flattens it out and makes it look bland.
Also, people need to be less afraid of shadows, in my opinion. They're... Also, a lot of people don't even know where Super Clear came from, damn it. you guys don't know. That's original Toy Arc. Like, you don't know. You...
No, I've been... Like, if you look at the pictures I've been doing lately, it was born out of a necessity of... I have two photo lamps. One of them blew out. It's wrecked. Like, I can't plug it in, because if I plug it in, sparks happen. It's not good. This lamp's dead. So I was down to one lamp, and I could position it to where I could eliminate almost all shadow, but I started finding it interesting when I was setting up figures before moving the lamp back to those positions. I'm like, yeah, you know, there's some shading here, and it kind of brings out some more contrast, and like these days, like, and there's times where you get a little bit of shadow in there, and there are details that are more noticeable.
Yeah.
Like, you put the light straight at it, super intense, and then everything flattens out. And
I love playing with shadow. I think it's a way to add shading and detail and make something... Like, you can add shadow and make something look 100 times more detailed than it even looks to the human eye. Like, depending on how your lights to...
Just more interesting. And yeah. I've started using... I'm moving away... Like, I've taken a picture of a couple things that work better with the blue background I had been using. I hadn't been using a black background because I was still using manual settings on my camera. And that really dark background, the camera would keep, like, trying to crank up the exposure.
Yep.
And then everything would get blown out. But now that I'm learning how to do manual... I'm going back to black because the blue just wasn't doing it for me anymore.
Coming back to black.
And you don't need that infinite empty space, I don't think, either background. Like, the black fabric cloth that I'm using for my background, I kind of shift it and move it and pinch spots to make creases and shapes. Just to have, I don't know, I just, personally, I find it more visually interesting.
I think there's a time and place for everything, and there's a time and place for the infinite white background, but it's not the only thing that everyone should be using.
Yeah, but I think people are looking at, like, the official gallery pictures at TFW and thinking that's what they're supposed to do. And you don't have to.
Yeah. Find an identity for your photos first. I think that's the main thing to me. Like, that's, like, easy example. I really like Gog's background because it's almost like I can look at a photo and go like, oh, that's Gog Dog's background.
Oh.
Like, his flicker is a great example of that. Or, you know, just... And I feel bad saying it because... I just say
experiment.
Yeah.
I say experiment with different lights, different cameras, just different focal lengths. Find what you think looks interesting, and it's probably going to be interesting.
And there's nothing wrong with white. Like, if you think white works, then go for it, but don't make that the be-all, end-all of your lighting scheme or your background scheme. Like...
Yeah, well, I had that mindset at one point, too. I thought, oh, it has to be white, because that's what everybody's doing. And then I found other things were more interesting.
Yeah. By the way, I actually don't know the info about it, but I'm just messing with Quakewave, and it's reminding me. There's some guy who's producing a really good stand for Quakewave's gun mode.
Oh, yeah, I saw Piao's video about it. I was like, that looks cool.
And as far as I understand it, the guy, I haven't done much research, but I got the impression that the guy is looking to make them for sale. or at least make them on commission. And I got to find out more info about that. I think his name was like Hair of the Dog or something like that. And that stand looked really good. Anyway, that's all of my on topic this week. So let's head into Off Topicsville. And Dan D. Fuzz, I know you got something that wasn't Transformers because I saw it on your Twitter.
Yeah, I got a few things. Some stuff you didn't see on my Twitter, so this will be a surprise.
First look debut exclusive. Yeah.
But unfortunately, like always, I haven't had a chance to really open anything, so I can't really comment on my feelings on any of these purchases, but I'll just mention the stuff that's come in. I got, on the Lego front, I bought the Horizon Express, which is the expert level creator orange train looking thing. It's a pretty nice looking model. Doesn't come with any tracks or any power functions. You have to buy that stuff separately, but I'm pretty excited about that one.
Do you think you might build more onto it, or just stick with the one?
I'm thinking about getting a second one. And doing the whole power functions thing to make it an actual motorized train. I have one other Lego train at home that also is not a motorized train, and it's a set that's no longer being produced. I think this train,
ghost train.
Oh crap! Okay, I have two Lego trains at home. Two other ones at home that I haven't built yet that are no longer in production. Actually, the ghost train's still out and about, but yeah. The other one I'm talking about you can't find anymore. And I think those look better on display as like, you know, train cars on display. And I think the Horizon Express would be an awesome one to just have going around a track.
When I was at that Lego store, if I could derail you for a second.
Sure.
You should get that Volkswagen bus kit.
Yeah, that's on my list of things to get. That is on my list of things.
The whole interior is modeled. Oh man, that thing looks cool.
Yeah, there's like a little hippie sign in the back that says like "Make Lego bricks, not war" or something like that.
What?
Yeah, it's. I don't know if you'll necessarily see it in a display on your in your Lego store. In ours, you can kind of see part of it in the very, very back window. So look back in that area, or if you could find pictures of a review online, you'll see that sign there too.
That Lego kit, it has like that VW bus has the Safari windows.
Yeah.
Which are like, if I ever found myself owning a VW bus, I would want the Safari windows because it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there. In fact, that's the interesting thing is a lot of people come in and talk about the VW bus specifically, which is so strange. It's like that is the set that draws a lot of people's attention over everything in the store. And while it's a great set, it's been around for a while. So it's kind of weird to see so many people like, oh, wow, look at that VW bus. That's so cool. I want that. Well, it's on the list. It's on the list.
If this trip that I was talking about not being able to go on to my home city of Erie, Pennsylvania, the dude whose house we would have been staying at is an old friend of my dad's. He collects Volkswagen buses.
Meh, that's awesome. Like
he owns a bunch of Volkswagen buses. And when I saw that, I'm like taking pictures. I'm like, you got to send these pictures to Mike. It's going to blow his mind.
Yeah. I've always liked the VW bus. I always thought it was pretty cool. And part of me wanted one, but the Lego one will definitely do. Okay, so moving on from the Lego set, I in part of my pile of loot, which I mentioned getting the Frenzy and Jaguar, I also got a Hot Toys Bane. So I have my own 1/6 scale figure that can say beef. I had to throw that in there for you.
That's good stuff.
But yeah, I got my Hot Toys Bane in. I'm pretty happy to have him after he started disappearing from places. And the price on BBTS started shooting up.
Are there any reports on how he turned out?
No, I have no idea. Well, like the guys on the show, I can't remember who has...
What show is that?
I wasn't going to plug it, but...
Well, why don't you?
Somebody else on pre-order 66, ooh, I am sure, oh, has Bane. I think John might have, Empire might have it, and has said positive things about it. But yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to open them yet, so I can't really comment on them.
Okay.
And then today at C2E2, I was on a mission to pick up something Hot Toys related. So I was wandering around the floor. I had passed on Hot Toys Captain America from the Avengers a few times. And he'd come out at $224. That's what Sideshow wanted for him. That's what BBTS wanted for him. He's gone from everywhere now. So he is just climbing in price on the secondary market. And I found a booth that had him for $200. I was like,
wow.
That's kind of odd. So I was like, hey, what's up with your cappy? Pulls down the Captain America. I pull off the sleeve. And I'm looking at it. I can't see anything wrong. He's like, is there anything wrong with it or anything like that? He's like, no, this is factory sealed. And he showed me that, you know, both ends are taped up. And I was like, $200? He's like, yeah. I was like, all right. I'm sold. Give them to me. So I paid for him. And up next to him was Thor. And they only had one Thor in. And he was also $200, which is pretty much what he's going for, you know, give or take, you know, shipping, tax, wherever you're buying him from. I said, you know what? Throw in that guy too. So I dropped $400 today on Captain America and Thor from the Avengers.
I'm not trying to say I would be the dick who'd do it, but I might have been the dick who'd be like, hey, I just bought this Captain America. You want to give me a deal on that Thor?
Well, so what happened there was I got the Captain America. I walked away. I was paraphrasing everything together. I walked away and I was talking with my wife and mentioning how I wanted Thor. She's like, oh, you should work to deal with him. You should have been like, hey, I'm buying this. Why don't you cut me a deal? I was like, yeah, but Captain America is already like $25 cheaper. And actually, if you go by the secondary market value, he's more than $25 cheaper than he should be.
Dude might not know.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Go talk to him. It's like, no, you go talk to him.
Oh.
So she goes over because she's like the wheeling dealing person. I never do
like
that.
Look, you moron. Give us a deal on that Thor.
Basically, Thor's like, yeah, we can't go any lower than this.
Okay,
you know,
so
even if you bomb at
asked.
The same time, yeah. So yeah, then I and they didn't take credit because I didn't have any more cash on me. So I had to go to the ATM, get out more cash, went back, okay, and bought the Thor. I was like, yes, I just bought that. Give me that. Done.
Because, yeah, my instinct would have just been like, hey, even if I came back and I'm like, look, I know I just bought that Captain America and I want to buy something else, but I would have just been like, I'm a little bit short. Can you give me a little run on that Thor so I don't have to run to the ATM again?
I always feel odd doing that. Just
tapping your index fingers on the pre-order 66 t-shirt.
He's like... It's like, who are you?
who is Crasis. That? Listen, no, son.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
You just call yourself Crasis and just turn into a total asshole and then just start.
It's like, what? Flip the table.
You know who I am.
And I saw a lot of other Hot Toys I had to pass on today that I might pick up tomorrow. I have no idea.
Scope them all out tomorrow. And if you see more than one at the table, like, cause I hate haggling too. All you got to do is just take the two of them, knock $30 off the two and just go like, hey, will you give me X price?
Yeah.
And if you just say it often, if they can, look like, all right. Or they'll try to knock like 25 off instead, but then you're still like, hey, $25.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, I should have done it off the bat, but yeah, I mean, it turned out like the guy claimed that he couldn't go any lower. I was already stoked to see a Cappy at $200 because
yeah.
I saw him four other places in the dealer room because I always make one lap completely before I start buying anything.
Good, good.
And yeah, he was $250 at every table I saw. So I came across the table, $200. I'm like, okay, I'm interested. I am interested at $200.
You should have walked up and said that as your opener.
Yeah, I am interested at $200.
Okay, I'm interested. Let's play dice.
Yeah, but apparently that was all they had, so I bought like their only Cappy and Thor. And after they came down, they moved some really dumpy Bowen statues in the place. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked. I came close to adding a Black Widow at a different table, but. I might change my mind and go back tomorrow. We'll see. But I've already spent a lot, and it's only been one day of the convention, so I'm trying to pace myself.
But now that you have a Chris Hemsworth head, are you going to do a full line of custom Snow White and the Huntsman figures?
Yes, that's why I bought him.
But that's the only reason I would buy him. Now that I have HBO, that's been on a lot, and I've seen about 75% of that movie in pieces. I can't stand it. It's awful.
You have HBO just for Game of Thrones, don't you?
That's the main reason I got it. And then once I got HBO Go going, I'm watching like everything I can. Newsroom is really good. Veep is hilarious.
I'm so tempted to go for it. I got caught up
on the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'd seen everything except for the most recent season.
I'm very tempted because we got really into Game of Thrones. A buddy of mine at work lent us the DVDs, so I am so tempted to go get HBO to do season 3.
Man, like every episode ends in like a what moment. Yeah. Like I can't even hint around things that happen, but like last week's episode, the ending was just like so badass. And the week before, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that.
Oh, which reminds me, yeah, tomorrow there was a booth that had like Game of Thrones like pint glasses. And I'm like, oh, I got to go back and get some of those to drink some beer out of.
Yeah, House Greyjoy is not my favorite, but I think they have all the coolest catchphrases.
Can I ask the question?
What is Dead May Never Die and Pay the Iron Price are just both so rad.
I gotta ask the question, where the hell are the toys?
I know. I want. Oh,
we're on season 3, right? Like season 1 and 2, I accepted it, but where are even the season 1 oriented toys?
There's just that throne that Seth bought, right?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. There's tons of merchandise. There's pint glasses, coasters, pins. Like, you could get a Hand of the King pin. You could get, like, every awesome house pin you could think of. There's tons of stuff, but no figures. And like every episode with Brienne, like, I think Brienne is really cool looking. Like, I love her armor. Her armor looks really neat. And I just go, man, I want a Brienne figure just because her armor looks rad and the character is cool. And like a Jon Snow, and like, you, there's so many.
There are tons.
I want a Peter Dinklage figure.
There are tons of. Just out of the first season, there were at least 3 characters I wanted in plastic. Even just an $8 or even a, sorry, like an $18 Nika figure of some kind. Like,
even if you can get the pop vinyl figures.
Yeah, when someone answers, like, when you go, like, yeah, where are the toys? And someone goes, like, oh, there's pop vinyls. I'm like, you should just get out.
Come here so I can slap your face.
Is this 2004? No.
I'll pop your vinyl.
Ah.
See what I did there?
I do. I saw it and I liked it. I'm subscribing for more.
As somebody's got, like, I can't believe NECA or McFarlane. I don't want McFarlane to do it. They won't have any joints. They'll just be little statues.
Well, I mean, at least Walking Dead have a toy line, even though I heard it's very up and down from McFarlane. But, like, NECA, I'm sure they must have at least tried. Like, they're the kind of company that would have asked how much the license is if it's out there.
Yeah, but I can't believe, like, none of the 6-inch companies have anything going. Like, personally, I would want, or 1/6 companies, I mean, I would personally want 6-inch figures because that's my preferred scale. But I can't believe nobody's done anything yet.
Yeah, I mean, just make a Tyrion Lannister figure.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I've seen statues.
Yeah, there is a statue. That's right. We did talk about that.
Like,
a statue. Dark Horse, maybe.
If there's any one character out of the first season, which
I
is still,
I think it's Tyrion. I think Tyrion is the statue.
Yeah, like the first season. Everyone I know who saw the first season and just kind of even saw the first season is like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to keep watching. You just start dropping like Tyrion lines, and everyone's like, yeah, that guy was cool. It's like that. That's like your transmedia character to move to other formats.
Yeah, there is a Tyrion statue made by Dark Horse, which I'm not crazy about the look of it.
Yes. Somebody should do a Bran and Hodor 2-pack.
Statues aren't toys, is all I'm saying.
No, statues are garbage. They're glorified paperweights.
That's fighting words for someone, but it's not me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, hey, this.
I understand.
Yeah, this looks like Turian at the Battle of Blackwater Bay, which is such a great episode. Oh man, Vangelis, you got to watch season two.
I know. Me and I keep waiting because Jacob wants to watch it too, and we made a thing out of watching season one. So I'm like, I'll wait until we have like the week to sit down and just watch the thing.
And we're only like halfway through season two right now.
Oh man, the Battle of Black. Turian has a speech during the Battle of Blackwater Bay. It's so great. I wish I could quote lines at you, but I don't want to ruin the speech.
I understand.
I appreciate that.
But like season one even, it's like every time Turian had so much as like a secondary character in the scene role, that scene became the best scene of the episode for me.
Yeah.
Well, dude just ate the show.
The only Turian bit I'm going to spoil is like because this statue, they have half man written there. So they're calling him half man. And yeah. That kind of starts in season one, the
barbarian
the hill tribes.
Dudes, yeah.
They call him half man. Somebody, I won't say who, somebody threatens to cut Turian in half. And his reply is, then they'll have to call me the quarter man. And that doesn't have the same ring to it.
God damn it, Turian.
I love that character, man. That is a great character.
Every single line that comes out of his mouth, I'm just like, oh, you smooth bastard.
Here, I won't put the context or say who he's talking to in season three, but somebody tells Turian, you're not as smart as you think you are. And his reply is, but I'm smarter than you, so I'm still ahead.
God damn!
I love it.
Ah, okay. Where were we? Dan, did you get anything else this week or this last little while?
No, that pretty much finishes, I mean, all the main points for mine. I can't think, nothing else is jumping out right now, so.
Alrighty.
That's me.
Seth, what did you do that wasn't Transformers?
Transformers. I got a few things.
Cool.
I got a G.I. Joe figure. This is one of the G.I. Joe Collector Club subscription figures. It is most likely the only subscription figure I will get. There are a few that I like. I kind of wish I was able to get my hands on Jinx, but I think that ship sailed and I don't want to pay through the nose for it. The one figure that I was willing to pay through the nose for was Iron Claw.
What did you pay for?
I don't remember exactly.
Because they have him at Big Bad and I've been sitting there looking at him. And I
yeah, that's where I got it from. So what I paid the iron price.
Oh, dear. I almost did a few times. I might, but I'm like...
I should have said that right away. Oh, man, I wish I thought to say I paid the iron price.
I was going
to
say, I like how you worked that in there. That was pretty nice.
I should have just said it from the start. I paid the iron price. Did you pay gold or did you pay the iron price?
So how is he?
I haven't opened it.
Oh,
whenever I get a rare Joe, I struggle as to whether or not I open it. And I normally open everything in the end. The only thing I haven't opened is I have a second SDCC movie Destro set that I haven't opened. And I've never opened my Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what Piper sells for now, but the last time I looked, which granted was like at least 3 years ago, it was selling for a lot. And when I saw that it was selling for a lot, I was like, I'm glad I never opened it. Yeah, I most likely will open it. I don't know if it's just how it's packaged, but his little beret just seems to be floating on top of his head. I don't know how well it fits. And even in pictures, it doesn't look like the beret fits that well.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm hemming and hawing really heavy on Iron Claw all the time. I'm like, do I or do I not?
Yeah, it's just, I always thought it would be cool if they worked in more villains. Because working in the comics or if they did a new cartoon series. Because like if you look at real world, and I'm gonna risk getting political here, but it's not really political, but it's sort of it's dancing on real world things that aren't pleasant. and acknowledging the fact that these things exist in real life. Like, if you look at a group like Al-Qaeda, they're like, Cobra would have to be, like, up to nonsense every single day. And, like, if you tried to compare Cobra to, a real-world terrorist organization, like, or even the Irish Republican Army, or anything like that, like, there's periods where they're laying low. There's periods where they're not, like, you kind of forget about them before they do something big again. And I think it would be cool if Joe introduced more factions of groups that they have to deal with. So, and like, do a story kind of set up where the Joes are like stretched thin, like they're always having to deal with one of these guys. And you could have Cobra, and you could have Iron Claw and his group. You could have that, what was his name, General Blitz or whatever from the Sergeant Savage line.
I love General Blitz's crazy like X-ray skeletal bit in that cartoon.
Yeah, and you could have the Action Man, I wish I could remember his name now.
Professor X or something like that.
No, it was like
Dr. X.
No. he wasn't a doctor, but what was it, the Iron Claw? Not the Iron Claw. I forget what that group's. I remember the Black Major. He was the second in command guy.
Never mind.
Anyway, I did a custom Black Major, which, you know, not to brag, I think came out really great. So I love that one of those other post-real American hero villains have been fashioned in some manner in an updated form. And I'd love to see the others. I will go out of my way to get any other bad guy leader that they decide to make.
I think that the onus is on someone, be it the club or Hasbro, to make a Miles Mayhem out of a G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they did Matt Tracker. They got to do
Miles. I know.
Why have they never done Miles Mayhem?
That's why I almost got a little bit miffed about Iron Claw, because I like Iron Claw, but I saw him happen, and I'm like, well, if you're going to do him, your excuses for not doing Miles Mayhem are slowly running through the hourglass. This the tighter you close your fists, the more galaxies slip between your fingers or something.
Yeah, the club would have to do it. I think Joe, mainline Joe, is in a really bad place right now.
Terrible place.
They have to figure out. I don't think the movie could carry G.I. Joe into the future. The movies, I should say. They have to come up with a cartoon series that kids today can grab onto.
And put Miles Mayhem in it. And put Iron... I think your idea, all these different villain factions, I think that would completely work. And it would be the shakeup that Joe needs. Because Joe needs a shakeup, is what it needs.
And then, you know, throw Red October in there.
Yeah.
And have them be allies, because, you know, they're not Soviets anymore, but...
You mean the October Guard?
October Guard. I'm sorry. I'm...
Hey, I just do it for someone's like, you mean October Guard? Why are you even talking about Joe?
You should have pushed your glasses up and said, actually, and then...
actually, so it's October Guard.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Man, I wish I could find that Joe Kahn October Guard box set for a reasonable price.
Yeah, that was a cool year.
They're just everywhere I see it, it's so expensive. I just can't bring myself to it, but because I love the Iron Grenadiers too. Have Destro split off and really push the Iron Grenadiers.
I really want that truck that they had the camper on the back, and you could switch like whose truck it was, if it was the October Guard truck or G.I. Joe truck. It was like one of like the add-on vehicles at the con. Oh, so cool. Sorry. Anyway.
No, that's fine. I got in on your segment. Yeah. So anyway, that's Iron Claw. Other things I got the Hanna-Barbera Space Ghost figure.
I heard that those things look really good in package.
Okay, remember when we were talking about the 4-inch Gears of War figures.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about how they had all this articulation except for a bicep swivel.
Yeah.
Same thing with Space Ghost.
Because
it is so much the same thing with Space Ghost, just like with the Gears figures. Their hands seem to be very obviously intended to be able to hold the rifle. Space Ghost has a hand. Because I don't know if you remember, but that little Space Ghost logo on his chest, he would touch that with two fingers, and that's how he communicated with his teenage sidekicks and monkey pal.
Yeah.
And he would put one hand on his gauntlet to shoot lasers out of his fist. He has a hand that is clearly sculpted for those poses. Can't do them. No bicep swivel.
Do you know what company did those Hanna-Barbera toys?
I think it's Jazzwear.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains everything. Never mind. All my line of questioning is over. Okay, good. I'm glad they got another license. That's wonderful.
Yeah, well, I saw you tweeting rants about Jazzwear, and I thought that you must have seen my tweets about Space Ghost, because I tweeted all these pictures of his articulation, because he has a thigh swivel. He has an ab crunch. He has universal hips.
Well, yeah.
He's got all... The only thing he doesn't have are ankle tilts and bicep swivel. And how do you not do bicep? Why do you sculpt a hand they just should have given him two fists. They have one hand specifically sculpted to touch his little chest emblem. I don't get it.
I don't understand how Jazzwares works. And I don't... I literally don't. And last... It just went up today, so you haven't heard it, but... I think I spent a little while last week talking about Jazzwares because I found on sale at a Toys R Us the El Fuerte versus Seth Super Street Fighter 4 2-pack on sale for like $4 or $5. So I was like, okay, let's just pick it up. I still haven't opened it yet because I'm so astounded just at how poor it looks on the card. And not just the figures, but the very presentation, the way that they are in a bubble. The bubble clearly, the insert has indentations custom pressed in for the two figures to be put in there, yet they're not pressed into the indentations. They're floating around inside the empty space between the indentations and the front of the card. So all their body parts are getting mangled and warped up everywhere. El Fuerte is just a man with his shins cut off to make him shorter.
Yes, it is Jazzwares. I just checked.
Good.
And he comes with his little monkey buddy that isn't poseable at all. You know, that's fine, whatever. I mean, I wanted to get this because, like, I had seen real Space Ghost cartoons when I was a kid, but I fell in love with Space Ghost from Space Ghost Coast to Coast. One of the most brilliant pieces of television ever created, in my opinion. I was mesmerized by Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I thought it was great. So I bought this thinking I'm getting Coast to Coast Space Ghost, not like the actual cartoon Space Ghost. So that's what I got. They just fell short on the articulation. It's a real bummer.
And the thing that makes me really just sigh is that many years ago, when Coast to Coast was still on the air, another company, who I can't quite remember, made a fairly definitive Space Ghost figure who came with his Coast to Coast hosting desk, but was also able to assume classic Space Ghost poses. And he was quite poseable. He had a ball-jointed neck. He could sit at his desk, all happy. And it was a great figure, and I'm astounded that at least 10 years later they weren't able to follow up on that somehow. But, I mean, I also don't know how Jazzwares work, so I just kind of stare at them. I'm like, I don't understand how you keep getting license after license.
Yeah, it's just... Well, it's
oh, that's the one, sir. Dan
yeah, it looks like it's Art Asylum.
Art Asylum, yeah, one. That's the one. I have that one back in BC somewhere.
Oh man, if it wasn't $100, maybe I would get it. But it's $100.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I find it frustrating when they have all these other higher end articulations, and then they fall short on the ones you really need.
Yeah.
Like the biceps level.
And I don't blame designers for that so much as I do whoever was in charge, whoever was ticking off on the work done. Because the designers might just be getting carried away with something, and maybe they even had a bicep swivel and somewhere down the line it got budgeted out. Like, I don't know who to... Because I don't want to refer to Jazzwares as a big nebulous entity. Like, there are people working at Jazzwares, and someone is responsible for them being one of the worst companies I've seen on the shelves in this last, like, couple of years.
Well, Dan just also linked us a Brack figure, which is also $100. And then I'm seeing, like, customers who viewed this item also viewed Zorak for $154. And poor Moltar is $26.99.
Yeah, well, I was like, why doesn't Moltar get love? I thought Moltar was great.
Well, there's also there's a Clear Space Ghost here for $10.
Yeah.
So it's the same $100 figure, just without any paint.
Yeah, it's when he's just now showing up to his desk at the beginning of the show.
You technically could just paint the toy.
There you go.
Now, if it was Clear Space Ghost with Banjo, I would get it just for the Banjo.
Hmm.
There are, okay, people who know and remember Space Ghost Coast to Ghost, when they hear my cat is named Banjo, they ask, did you name it after Banjo and Space Ghost Coast to Ghost? No, I didn't. I named it after Mr. Hi-Fi Banjo Strings from Syphil and Ollie, but that's something completely different. Banjo was Space Ghost's sea monkey that got too big, and he had to kill it. And in his big lament, why do we always hurt the ones we love? Why, Banjo? Why, Banjo? I told you I'd love that show. Okay, other things I got. Last thing I got off topic. So last time I had gotten that Mospedia Alpha Fighter. And I'm still going to mix up American and Japanese words here.
Because
I don't care.
Oh.
It's all Robotech Season 3 to me.
Jazzwares.
This is the WTF at TFW version of Macross Storytime. So settle in, because I'm going to be here for 10 hours.
Jazzwares.
All right, time to catch up on the sleep. All right, I know how this drill goes.
So there's a space whale and a guitar. And I pilot my Valkyrie with my guitar and whale blood. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, so last time I got
I know what you're referring to. Why do I know what you're referring to?
Right now, somewhere, Krasis has the weirdest boner and he doesn't understand what's happening. Okay, so I got in the Alpha Fighter. And I had mentioned that BBTS had cut the price on the betas. Now, the alpha that I ended up with was the Japanese boxed version. Right? And I had gotten the American Robotech boxed version in the past, which came busted. Like, the right hand, when I flipped open the intake, because it shipped in a jet mode, when I flipped open the intake and flipped the hand out, the hand just fell into pieces because it was busted in the box. And then one of the knee guards was misassembled and was just all torn up and gnarly looking. Sent it back, got a refund. Get a Japanese one. Everything's assembled properly. Nothing's broken, but it's really loose and floppy. And I decided, okay, I'm going to go for it. These beta fighters were originally listed as $150. BBTS has them marked down to 100 even. I went, well, if you got one, you got to get the other one. So I ordered. So this is the Robotech box one. Now, I had somebody on Twitter respond to me that they love their beta fighter. It's rock solid. Nothing's loose. Nothing's floppy. They just love how it's big and chunky and burly looking. my beta fighter, I guess Robotech hates me, even though I love it. It's an abusive relationship. The hips are super loose.
Sucks, because I heard good things about the beta, so I never looked into it much, but I heard people happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, it stands, but if I hold it up by the chest and shake it, the legs flop around all over the place. Otherwise, it's fine. The only other issue I have is maybe it's because I have the Japanese Alpha, the American Beta. They're both green, but the shade of green isn't consistent. The Beta Fighter is much darker. I'm not going to get rid of this thing and hunt down a Japanese one just because the green isn't the same. It's good enough. This thing being much bigger, being a simpler transformation, I think works for what this company is capable of producing. There's a couple things that I found disappointing, like in that the long plastic piece that attaches the Alpha, or when it's landed, attaches the front landing gear. I would have liked that to have been a telescoping piece that slid out instead of two different pieces that you plug in, one for attaching the Alpha, one for being the landing gear. And then the landing gear are all separate pieces. And then there's a plate to plug the hole when you don't have either of the rods stuck in. I found that all disappointing that it wasn't integrated. Otherwise, you know, it's functional. It is big. It is burly. It is what it is. I haven't attached the two yet. I'm going to. I'm in the process of photographing everything. And I just ran out of time the other day and didn't get around to taking the combined picture. And I just accidentally closed my Twitter page. I was going to link you a picture of the two together so you could see the, because that's where I put a picture. I just did a quick picture on a blue background because I took it with my iPhone and my iPhone couldn't handle the black background.
iPhone was like, this isn't super clear enough.
Yeah, I don't understand what's happening.
Do you even know who Chopper Face is?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is going to take a second to find.
That's a bummer that it didn't pan out to be like high quality.
Well, I mean, it's still pretty good. I mean, it's not junk.
Yeah.
And you know, for $100, it's big. And I got both these things at prices that I can't really complain, because I mean, the Alpha that I got was like its original $60 price, which I didn't find it anywhere else for that cheap. Everywhere else was like pushing 200 or at least 150. So you know, for what I paid, I think they're both what I paid for.
Yeah.
Like these size figures transforming from pretty much anybody else would have been far more expensive. They may have been higher quality. I don't know, but it's fine. I think it's okay. And I'm having trouble finding the picture, because the way pictures display on Twitter is annoying these days.
Yeah, I keep going to the big grid thinking, all right, the big grid's back. It's nice and chronological, and then it's not.
Well, and then I can't easily get a link out of it. Like, yeah. I have to find my tweet, and I think I figured it out here. If I could get to my favorites now. I just favorited my own tweet. So.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Well, it's the only way I could find it easily from my feed. Copy. And, oh, man. I feel really bad for the listeners having to listen to me look for a picture. Awful. So, anyway, there it is. So, you can see how much darker the beta is, but you could also see how much bigger it is.
Oh, come on, Twitter. Don't. Now the listener gets to listen to me waiting for Twitter to load the picture because Twitter's running super slow on my end.
Maybe this link.
Oh, there we go. Oh, that is a difference. Okay.
And yes. When you open the cockpit, there's a little pilot in both of them, which is cool.
Hmm. Yeah, which, I like the size of the beta. Like, it's got a cool, unique look. It's all shoulders.
Yeah, and those white parts at the front of the shoulder flip open, and there's missiles.
Oh, cool.
Which is all right. Yeah, but the general design of the beta is a lot less ambitious. Like with that alpha, there's multiple hatches that flip open to reveal missiles. The landing gear is integrated. They were maybe too ambitious with what they were capable of with the alpha, which leads to a lot of its issues. And then they maybe weren't ambitious enough with the beta when they had a larger size to work with. But you know, they are what they are, and I'm glad to have them.
Yeah.
Because when you look at that triumvirate of a series from that same guy, it was the same guy that did the design for Macross, Southern Cross, and Muspedia. Obviously, Macross is the one that people love the most because it's had series continue on, but I think most people would pick Muspedia as their second, and everyone just seems to hate Southern Cross. But that is my off-topic.
Alrighty. I got a little bit of off-topic stuff myself. One easy one is, for whatever reason, I was walking by my Toys R Us, and on sale for, like, the price of one single-packed Marvel Universe figure, like the little 4-inch ones, was the 2-pack of Wolverine and She-Hulk. That's brown costume Wolverine and, I guess, like, Secret Wars-era She-Hulk. And so that 2-pack was like $10. And I was like, hey, that's not a bad price. And I heard that She-Hulk figure is really good. So I picked it up. And the She-Hulk figure is pretty good. It's really nice to mess with a good Marvel Universe figure that isn't as bulky as Thanos or the Juggernaut. So, and that is a female figure as well. I think that was one of the big wins of She-Hulk, is that they finally have this really good female, I guess, buck to build other characters off of. The Wolverine's...
Which size She-Hulk is this?
The 4-inch one. Like the 3¾-inch, sorry. Yeah. Marvel Universe. She's the same figure as the single-packed She-Hulk, but seeing one that cost $1 more than the single-pack one that came with a Wolverine, I feel like that looks like a better deal.
What's the difference in... Because they're never the same.
The difference is the single-pack She-Hulk has a deeper shade of green for her skin, and she's wearing a more modern costume. Like the white and purple, whereas the one in the 2-pack is just wearing the straight purple.
I think it's only a matter of time before they do a Fantastic Four uniformed one.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if they don't. And if they do, that's not bad, because it's a good little figure. And the Wolverine is okay.
I think they've already done a Red She-Hulk.
I don't know if they did it in the Universe line. I know they did one in Legends, like the big figures. But, anyway, that Wolverine in the brown costume, I like the brown costume a lot. And the Wolverine is the best Wolverine figure I've messed with in that line, but I haven't messed with many. He's got thigh swivels, but he doesn't have tiltable ankles. He's got wrist cuts, but his wrists are sculpted a bit bent inward, so he kind of looks funny. Like, he's got bent wrists all the time. And it comes with issue one of X-Men versus the Avengers from way back in the day when the Avengers had, like, the Black Knight and stuff. And then also, another thing I got in the mail, which I actually covered in a vlog along with one other thing, was I got my Reprosatsu Tamashii Stage decals from Reprosatsu. It's the Rainer. It's Trent. He offered to sell me... I bought set two from him, and I also wanted to buy another copy of set one from him to have another go at some of the ones I messed up when I was, I guess, like, beta testing the first set. And then he offered to sell me set three as well, so I was like, sure. So I've got all three sets of Reprosatsu decals. I do not have that many Tamashii stages, but I would like to eventually pick up some more to apply more of these things, because they're really well done. And it sounds like he's already starting to think of, like, winding down on doing it before it gets carried away or before the thing kind of caves in on itself. As always, just visit Reprosatsu on Twitter. That's the place to talk about that stuff. The last thing I got was something from my friend Neestuff. He's the guy who got me into GLaDOS back in the day. I can't believe it's already something that was back in the day. But he sent me a box, and it had a specific thing in it. But first I'm going to talk about the bonus things he threw in. One of them was a really cool glass. It's a drinking glass that is shaped exactly like a Coca-Cola can. Like, it's got Coca-Cola logos on embossed on it, and it's, like, actually, like, printed into the glass. But it's the dimensions and shape of an aluminum can. And it's the perfect size. I've never had a glass feel so natural on my desk. Like, it's not too tall, it's not too short, it's not too wide, it's perfect. Because I guess maybe that's down to the well-designed dimensions of your common aluminum can. But having it in glass form just feels really good. So I've been really enjoying this glass. He also, this is the funny thing that he threw into the bottom of the box, he got me a pair of coloring books. And I don't know if you guys have seen these. These things are coloring books that are kind of just kicking around in dollar stores all over the place. But they're called the T-Bots Coloring and Activity Guide. I'm going to show you a link of what one of them looks like. And it's basically just a like your classic goofy coloring book, but it's full of transforming robot designs, and they're all somewhat original. They look like Florodeary line art for a cartoon that is comprised of Transformers knockoffs. And some of them are really interesting, because, like, they're kind of like Transformers, but then they're all kind of not. It's printed on really trashy cheap paper. Every page is perforated so you can rip it out. It's got connect the dots pages. It's got the ones where half a robot's face is drawn, and it's like, draw in the other half. And it's just got some big pictures of robots doing stuff that you can color in. But it was a neat thing to throw in the bottom, because I had almost bought one of these in the States, because it was like $5, and I was like, this is so stupid, I should get this, and then I didn't. But then these stuff filled in that gap in my collection. So I literally added them to my bookshelf alongside my hardcover Transformers books and my video game art coffee table books. I also have the T-Bots activity guides. But the main thing that came with this box was Neestuff he's a fellow who has done a production level PVC figure series. It was these little six guys called the Anomalies. They were just like Monster in My Pocket style figurines. He's doing his first actual multi-component figure using the GLaDOS system, and it's very much based on what GLaDOS stuff looks like. So I'm just sharing with you a couple of screenshots from the video I did, and now I'm going to share it with you guys the blog post where I took some photos with my iPad. So this little thing's called the Outlander, and he sent me one of the test copies done in just like a random cyan kind of blue plastic. When these go into production, they're going to be actually like they're going to have some paint apps on them and stuff, and I think they're going to be done in like, I think, white and gray or white and turquoise. I'm not quite sure. And he says they're coming out in either June or July. So it's like a little GLaDOS-style figure. It's 18 components, which means you can kind of pull it apart and, you know, build with it however you want. The cool thing about it is that it actually has this big astronaut helmet that you can pull off. And underneath it is this really cool head that kind of looks like the engineer design from Prometheus, which I thought looked really cool. As a GLaDOS figure, it brings a lot to the table, and I think it's a really well-done little piece, especially as a debut multi-component figure. It's really characterful. So I got a video up. I've got some photos up. KneeStuff has a whole bunch of photos up on his site as well. KneeStuff.com or specifically 481universe.com. And I believe the painted versions of this guy are going to run somewhere between 10 to 12 bucks. Unpainted versions are going to be like $8, just in like solid plastic colors or in clear plastics if you want to customize with them. And I really, really like this little figure. I just spent a day and a half just messing with it before I wrote and shot the video. And it's very endearing. It's clearly a love letter to the original GLaDOS figures, the Travelers. But it has a lot of unique stuff and a lot of really ambitious stuff that it brings to the table. In terms of, like, not just the helmet, but, like, lots of pieces that can be flipped around in place to make the aesthetics of the guy change. The torso piece can be flipped over, and it was designed so that no matter which orientation it's in, the shoulder plugs are aligned with a clear shoulder line. So I really like it. And it's a little spaceman. So it's pretty cool. And hopefully KneeStuff will be able to get those out in June rather than July, but he's the guy in charge of that stuff. I just get to mess with this cool little prototype, and I'm really, really honored that he sent it my way, because he let me be the one to reveal the head under the helmet, and I thought that was really cool of him. So I had fun with that. And that really about does it for the stuff I got this week. Unless there's anything else you guys want to add, I guess we can move into the ending and outro chapter of this podcast. Dan, thank you for coming by while you're on your travels to hang out with us here.
Of course. Thanks for the invite. I always love being on the show.
Yeah, we were finally able to record again in an evening, so it felt like it was a good time to tap some resources. That and Seth said if you should maybe bring someone else in. Aside from Seth outright saying that it's a really good idea that we should probably do that, I had this great idea of bringing you in here.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. Yeah, you know, that's cool.
Well, and we'd been recording at such weird times and days with my hours being crazy. Now that my hours are closer to normal, it seemed like it was plausible to do a third person.
Yeah, when we the last couple of weeks, for those who don't know or didn't catch on, like we were recording literally at like in Pacific time, I think at like one time at like 9 in the morning, once at like noon. Like it wasn't feasible to then also try to line up a third person amidst all that. So we're back in Feasibleville.
Yeah, feasible. I like. I can work with.
And thank you, Seth, for you know coming by as always.
What the fuck's going on down?
And thank you, listeners, for listening. Listening. Everything. We've got a Google voicemail inbox that someday I'm gonna get my hands dirty in that thing. But its number is 318-775-9830. That is 318-775-9830. That's 318-775-9830. My name is Vangelis. That was Seth and Dan Defoz. And we are WTF at TFW episode 249 coming to a close now.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.